This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki going to wake you up and ease you through this rainy Monday morning here in Winnipeg. It is game day, Birchwood Chevrolet, Buick GMC, Winnipeg Jets game day, as Winnipeg Jets take their 1-1 record into a battle at MTS Center tonight. 7 o'clock, the puck drops with the Boston Bruins. The Bruins!
I like the way he said Boston.
Matt Damon's favorite team, Ben Affleck's.
I'm sure, yeah.
You always see him at the Red Sox. No love for the Bruins, those two, eh? You win an Oscar, and hockey's not good enough for you guys. I remember Geely. I remember, Ben.
Yeah.
The Bruins are in town, 1-1. Of course, the Winnipeg Jets went on the road and blew a 2-0 lead down in Minnesota at the XL Energy Center and gave up 4 straight goals before coming back to make it 4-3 late in the game. Interesting game. Home opener for the Minnesota Wild. They come out on fire, as you expect any team to do. Jets get 2 late first-period goals and then just nothing in the second period. 2 shots on net the whole period.
And I'll say, in watching that game, that the Jets got too fortunate. Like, they were fortunate as heck to be up 2-0 in that period. I thought they got dominated in the first period. I know, like, Ehlers makes one heck of a read, and the blast was awesome. That was an awesome goal. And get pretty lucky, I think, on the buff off of Wheeler goal. But I thought that the Wild carried the big-time chunk of that first period as well, and it just as easily could have been 2-0 for the Wild. So I'm hearing a lot of people talk about the game saying that disaster struck in the second period. I thought you could smell the disaster in the first period, and things just kind of kept going from there.
Well, I mean, being the home opener and the introductions and everything, I just expected Minnesota to come out on fire a little bit and maybe have a storm to deal with for the first 8 to 10 minutes. It went longer than I thought, and then, of course, they get the 2 goals, and you think going into the second, this is what you needed. You get that momentum, you can carry it over. And so I wasn't surprised at the way the Wild came out and sort of took it to the Jets, but I was shocked how the Jets came out in the middle frame.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's no ceremonies in the second period. You should be ready to go at that. And the fact that you were basically gift-handed a 2-goal lead, like you said there, Jim, I mean, this should be kind of your bread and butter where you go to work and I don't even care if you give a couple goals back in the period, right? But give a little bit of a fight there. Like, do something, for God's sake. I mean, it was really troubling and discouraging to watch. And, man, I know it's just 2 games to start the season here, but you kind of start to wonder to yourself a little bit here about the pains and the struggles that this season might hold. And I don't even think it's necessarily the youngsters right now. I think they're kind of holding their own so far. I look at some of the veterans and how poorly this team has played through 2 games. Right now, just 2 games, I know, but they're dead last in the NHL in terms of puck possession. A Corsi percentage of 41. Like, that's a troubling number. Yeah. And you might say, well, it's just 2 games, calm down a bit. They were also dead last in the preseason at just over 40%.
Third last.
Okay, so yep. We're talking a slight improvement there where you move up to 28th. Like, these are kind of issues that have been underlying going into the year, and they did not get any better for the start of the season here. So they got to turn it around in a big way, and get it done real soon because, I mean, they've got 7 goals right now through 2 games, and that might be the most unsustainable stat of all here, where they haven't worked super hard to get a ton of those goals. They've gotten very fortunate so far this season to have 2 points.
Well, and the same issues rear their ugly head with this team. Paul Postma reduced to 7 minutes and 51 seconds of ice time, meaning Dustin Byfuglien has to go 30 minutes and 35 seconds on Saturday night. And then Michael Hutchinson, 27 saves on 31 shots, .871 save percentage, and one there in the third period, I'm sure, from the Wall that he would love to have back. Another game where we're seeing 1 or 2 Jets goals where the goalie would want one back.
So, you know, I thought that was the one with Myers right in front. I thought he was just screened on that shot in a huge way.
From the side there where...
He kind of looks at him too.
Myers
right
was
after.
Standing right in front of him. I thought the Dumba goal that he should have had, but other than that, I thought Hutch actually played a pretty good game.
And you kind of brought up the one guy there who I think we need to be. I mean, people are going to look at Paul Postma in his 7 minutes, say that he struggled. Well, he didn't really have a ton of time to get, you know, to earn the scorn of a bunch of Jets fans. But Tyler Myers has to get his game going big time, because that goal right there, he has no, I mean, like, you just got to be smarter than that right there.
Yeah.
You know, like, just to get out of the, either get in the way or get out of the way. Like, you got to, if you're going to screen your goaltender like that, you better be close to 100% sure you're blocking that puck. He's just making turnover after turnover in his own end. And his old ex-Sabres teammate too, Drew Stafford, I don't know if it was the same goal, the Myers screen, but Stafford goes down low to get the puck in the corner, and where does he throw it?
I tweeted that out, man. He's the right wing. He's down low in the corner, and he plays a soft chip off the boards up to who? You're supposed to be up there, and you're in the corner. You just, it's a gift from God for the wild guy on the blue line, and it ends up turning into the goal. So it was just, you have to eat the puck in that situation. You have to maintain possession or find something else to do than to serve up a soft one to the Wild there. And the two other things that stood out for me, guys, is on the first and third goal for the Wild, it was the trailer. And the first goal, Ehlers is just loafing his way back and ends up being the trailer. And he had all kinds of time to get re-engaged in the play, but just was lazy or too tired, whatever combination of it, to get back. And Wheeler was the guilty party, and he was obviously totally gassed. But I just thought, even watching throughout the game, guys, that there were times where the Jets were getting caught out on the ice and were super, super tired before they got off, and it hurt them.
Well, and this begs the question, I think, two games into the season, 1-1, come from behind, overtime win against Carolina, a 4-3 blowing a two-goal lead to the Minnesota Wild is what we can expect from this year's Jets. Like, there's going to be some positive, there's going to be some negatives, and there's going to be some struggle. But the struggle, as Brandon pointed out, you would think would be from the young players, and it seems to be some of the vets, like Tyler Myers is at a rough start to the regular season, just two games in, and said he was felt better than he ever has after his two surgeries and feeling healthy. And, you know, people detest and well, not detest, but don't like the plus minus stat. And I understand that, because it's not very accurate at all. And I've talked to several players even about how they feel it's got to be given a reference of probably 10 either way. So if you're minus 23, or you could be minus 13, or you could be minus 33. Like, or if you're plus 12, you could be plus 24, or actually plus 2 on how it goes. But I thought Saturday night, Tyler Myers, 23-19 of ice time, minus 2. Paul Postma, 7:51, minus 1. Toby Enstrom, 20:12, minus 1. But then you have Dustin Byfuglien and Josh Morrissey, both plus 2. 18 minutes and 18 seconds for Morrissey, 30 minutes and 35 seconds for Dustin Byfuglien. It was kind of indicative of who played well on the blue line that game and who didn't. I thought Josh Morrissey looked real good.
Damn good. And you're talking plus minus, and I'll go to Corsi, man, and you're talking like 50% Corsi for Morrissey. You're talking a 46% almost for Dustin Byfuglien. And then it gets real ugly with some of the guys that you mentioned, where Enstrom's at 23% and Myers isn't a whole lot better than that. So there's just at 37%. There's just a level of struggle there that reflective in whether you want to go with the plus minus or the Corsi. But it's, yeah, the impact or what, how comfortable Morrissey looks out there, demanding 30 minutes out of Dustin Byfuglien, you just kind of wonder where that's going to get to you. And I, you know, and we can also touch on the lineup changes, right?
Well, like, I was going to get into that next year.
Like, and I thought, like, even just, I thought that Sherratt and Postma held their own pretty good in that first game. And so that to me was an interesting, like, I understand you don't want your guys to get stale, that argument and debate being used and stuff, but it I don't know why you would make the moves that they did, including taking Armia out, who had such a good game. Like, keeping the guys involved, sure, but you were up against a division rival. So that's what I really, perplexing. I know it's early and all the rest of it, but these games add up the most. The Minnesota Wild is one of the teams you're going to have to catapult if you're ever going to get into a playoff spot. And I was perplexed at these moves against a division rival.
Well, and Paul Maurice said prior to the game in some of the audio that they had on the pregame show that it was real tough to scratch Mark Stewart in the home opener, franchise leader in games and everything like that, and talked about Chris Thorburn as well. The Armia scratch, I don't really understand, because to me, he had a solid game. He's got some experience. I'm not going to come down on Kyle Connor because he's an 18-year-old rookie, but if you're going to sit a guy down and a division rival on a road game, I would think it'd be the 18-year-old rookie. Let the veteran guy, who might not be as skilled as Kyle Connor, but at least he's not going to understand the road home opener atmosphere and everything around that. And then Mark Stewart draws back in, Ben Chiarot goes out, and those were the decisions he made. And those the comments from Paul Maurice that I'm referencing is it's real tough to do that to those guys. I understand that. I understand it's real tough, despite what people think, to send Andre Pavlik down. But those are the decisions that you're paid to make, yeah. And those are the decisions that you need to win games on. And it is tough. It's excruciating. But especially when guys like Stewart, who like him or not, will literally bleed for you. And that's a hard decision to make. I just would have maybe gone with the same lineup because you won on Saturday in on Thursday. I would have gone with the same lineup on Saturday night in Mini, and then coming home to Boston, hopefully you have 3 or 4 points total, and then you bring your veterans back in, especially Mark Stewart, who used to play for Boston, and just that whole realm of it.
Agreed 100%.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to argue against any of that, right? I mean, the Mark Stewart thing, I don't like it, but it's not like it's an egregious decision there, right? Because Ben Chiarot was okay, but it's not like you watch him play and you go, well, that guy needs to be in the lineup all 82.
Yeah.
So I even the Mark Stewart one, I can kind of understand. But the Chris Thorburn thing, it takes everything in me not to try and curse when I talk about this, but it's just ridiculous now. What are we doing here? And Paul Maurice puts him in the lineup, and he talks about all of Thorburn's great attributes, and he waxes poetic about all the things he does for the team. And then he plays him 6 damn minutes a game. So you're going to put this guy in the lineup. You can't even trust to get anywhere near 10 minutes. Wherein Joel Armia gets in there, he plays double digit. He plays penalty kill. He provides any kind of spark he can give you there. All Chris Thorburn can do is drop his gloves, grab Chris Stewart, and get punched in the face 5 times. Mm-hmm. Like, great. I'm jacked up to get back up there on the ice. And the fact that he says it's hard to take these guys out of the lineup. Is it easy to bench Joel Armia after he has the game that he had in the season opener where he single-handedly kills a penalty for you? Is that an easy decision for you? I mean, the kid plays his heart out, and he does everything you ask for him, and what is your reward? Sit in the bench. Sit in the press box. You're not good enough. This makes absolutely no sense to me. I'm glad it's a hard decision. Make it hard all 82 to have him in the press box because there is no tangible evidence for you to play Chris Thorburn over any of the young guys that the Jets have this far.
Well, and I'm not that down on Thorburn as you just because of Chris Stewart being in the lineup. And that's the thing that we go back to last week. And I know you guys hate this conversation, but it is what it is.
But I don't hate the conversation, but I said this the second that happened. I was watching the game with my uncles and I said this. I said, if you're going to have a guy like Stewart in that lineup, and you know you're probably going to have to deal with him, or you may have to deal with him, then dress the heavyweight champ instead of a guy that's going to go out there and get it handed to him. Like, you know, 5 minutes or 6 minutes, well, you could have Peluso in there, and Peluso's going to win that fight.
As fast as Chris Thorburn.
But guys
Peluso
like you that think that
like
fighting can motivate and do like give a team a shot in the arm. Chris Thorburn's not the guy to go out there and win that fight.
And that's my point about that's what the part of the game it is. Chris Thorburn clearly tried to get some momentum back by doing that, and that's, you know, what Maurice likes. Whether anybody likes it or doesn't, Maurice likes that part of the game and understands it. So I'm not, you know, as down on it as Chris on Chris Thorburn because I get why he's here and I get why he's in the lineup. I just wouldn't have done it on the road in that game given that you won and it's a division rival. And coming home against Boston, I think perhaps that's a better game. I would have gone with the same lineup personally, other than the goaltender, if you wanted to give Hutchinson a chance on the road against a division rival. Then come home. You got Boston. You got Toronto. There's 2 games this week that you can get your vets back in.
When I saw that fight, and I thought ahead to Ryan Reeves, and I thought all the other sort of matchups that exist in the NHL where the big boys could go at it. I thought 100%, if you're going to have that, and he's playing 5 or 6 minutes a game, so it really doesn't matter, you dress Peluso, because then at least you win the fight. And if you think that does something to give the guys a shot in the arm, winning a fight is going to do that. Getting your, you know, a wrestling match, which normally is what Thorburn does, or lose, that's not serving you any. That's not helping your team out. Even for the old school guys.
You're listening to The Big Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. We're on a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day as the Boston Bruins are in town, and we continue to break down the loss 4-3 in Minnesota on Saturday night. Yeah, I mean, that's what the role is, and that's why I think he was thinking of that. And Maurice likes that role, and we'll see the lineup that they put together tonight. The other thing we're going to talk about up next and throughout the morning here on The Big Show is what another massive win for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. But did you like it? Did you like the way the Bombers won? That's coming up next on The Big Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day as the Boston Bruins come to town to take on the Winnipeg Jets here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. The Big Show, Jim Tope, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, Hustler and Lawless will kick it off at 3 o'clock live from Boston Pizza City Place. Then the Manitoba Buildings Trades Winnipeg Jets pregame show with Rick Ralph starts at 6 o'clock, puck drops at 7 with Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns, followed by the Huron Windows Winnipeg Jets post-game show as Clean Line Winnipeg Jets hockey returns to the station today. Gentlemen, on the weekend, Friday night, actually, late Friday night, a late start on the wet coast, I like to call it, to Vancouver, the BC Lions. Winnipeg Blue Bombers went at it, and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers pulled out a 35-32 win. And once again, the defense, this is the weirdest defense I've ever seen in a long time, I guess, that I can recall, gives up so much yards and yet gets so many turnovers. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers sweep the home-and-home series with the BC Lions and move into second place in the West with a 35-32 win.
Yeah, and that's going to be the storyline for the rest of the days here for the Bombers this season, is can they continue to create the number of takeaways they are defensively to survive games, more or less, because they're getting ridden up and down the field pretty good. Although I thought early in this game it was a pretty good defensive battle, but that's going to be what defines the remaining, what has defined a bunch of the season up to now, what will remain to define their level of success from here on out and into the playoffs for sure, is that takeaway thing. And holy cow, did Taylor Loeffler have a game, a couple of interceptions, and the forced fumble, just a wicked hit, and a fumble recovery as well. And that happened after Jonathan Jennings specifically called out Taylor Loeffler in BC, saying anytime he's on the field, we're going after him. And they did for the first touchdown, where they had a matchup with Rainey, and there was another deep ball that was completed against him. So it looked like he was going to start off a little bit rough and truly be targeted, but he responds to the degree that it did. Both he and Andrew Harris was an absolute inspiration in this game. The guy is just an animal out there, and how strong he is, the way that he initiates the contact with the defensive players. Like, it's very rare that you get receivers or running backs who are delivering the hits and the blows. You know, normally they're absorbing them for the defensive player. Defensive players will just salivate. But I think back to Mike Pringle, and I remember at one of our bomber parties, the DBs were sitting around, and they were talking about how scared they were to have to go and tackle Mike Pringle. And they were truly scared. Like, they're saying they're doing things trying to get out of the way and all that. And they were, you know, guys were, it was after a win and stuff, but still they were being very open about it. And they wanted nothing to do with him. And you get that feeling when you see Jerome Messam run. Mm-hmm. You get that feeling when you see Andrew Harris run. And he was just so inspirational in what he's doing out in the field.
He had the truck stick activated in that one. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's kind of the CFL's version of Beast Mode when he really gets going out there, because it's taken one. I always like watching the DBs when guys like that start running, and you start seeing three or four business decisions being made there where, you know, you kind of hold your arm out a little bit, but you're not going full in there against him. I mean, the fact that the Bombers have the win and kind of the inside track for home field advantage, you know, you want to come into Winnipeg early November, maybe minus five, maybe minus 10 if it gets a little chilly.
Maybe.
You got big number 33 running down there, and hey, Lord knows you make it to Calgary somehow, and sure, the Bombers have to go up against Mesa, but on the flip side, Calgary would have to go up against Harris at another chilly game like that. I mean, the Bombers are they're kind of looking, I got to use the D word here, they're kind of looking like a team of destiny almost here, where you're just getting all the bounces going your way. It's been like that for a number of weeks now, yeah. And you kind of start to wonder a little bit here. Like in hockey, you get the Flames a few years ago, the Avalanche, the Leafs, where
we just locked on
right?
That, like the shoulders of good luck in
yeah,
the football guys, right?
The stats yeah. just don't really yeah. point to this team being as good as they are. But every now and then you get that year where everything just kind of lightning in a bottle where everything works out in your favor. And I'm starting to wonder if this is kind of that year, especially in the last minute there where yeah. Jennings, for some reason, the Lions are throwing the ball and he just tosses one up. And then the fumble right after that one, he just kind of you start to wonder a little bit if there's something more going on.
Yeah,
here.
That play late in the game like that, you're up by seven, you're at your own 35. Like there's just no reason in the world to put a 50-50 ball up like this. So both the play call and the throw, right? Like those two things coming together for Jennings and BC, it was a crazy thing to do, especially when the Bombers are having so much trouble getting in your end zone. You just try and be very conservative and then punt the ball and let your defense keep the Bombers out of the end zone instead of giving the opportunity that they did with that turnover. That final 6 minutes, they're up, Lions up by 10, and it just doesn't look good at all. The Bombers have to settle for that field goal from the 1 yard line, and everyone's like, "Oh my God, what are they doing settling for that?" Well, Cal Murphy would have settled for that too, because you need two scores.
Which is a smart move.
You have to take the score when you got it, and then of course the touchdown, and then the kickoff fumble. Like Wicks is saying, all these dominoes falling, and the football gods riding high on the shoulders of the Bombers. It was remarkable.
BC put up 430 total yards on the Blue Bombers. The Bombers put up 374.
How many yards?
The Lions
put up?
430.
It doesn't matter how many yards.
What's your name, little lady? We'll take a break and get back into the Jets as it is. Clean Line Winnipeg Jets hockey returning to the station on a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. They host the Boston Bruins on the Big Show next. TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Check out iHeartRadio. It's a brand new way to listen to your favorite radio stations, including TSN 1290, a revolution in music listening with over 210 channels of music absolutely free. Download the free app today. The Big Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca, and a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day as the Boston Bruins are in town tonight. Puck drops on the station at 7 o'clock. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you, and the Winnipeg Jets are coming off a 4-3 loss in Minnesota. Gentlemen, we were breaking this down, and I was mentioning the second period. Really, in the home opener, I was giving credit to Minnesota Wild. They're going to come out fired up. They're going to sort of take it to the team that they're facing for a little bit. But the second period where the Winnipeg Jets only had two shots on net was really, in my mind, the difference, and that's where Minnesota really got their scoring going in the middle frame there to take their first lead of the game. Head coach Paul Maurice of the Winnipeg Jets said this about the lack of shots after the game.
Well, some of it was selection, not shooting the puck when we had the chance. I mean, we had a hard time moving past that, so we didn't have second and third touches on the puck, which is something we usually are very, very strong with off shots or pucks to get released back down low. So feel a little stronger down there and hang on to some pucks a little bit more. And get a few more through.
I thought when I was watching this game, guys, I was wondering, the impact of Bruce Boudreau on the Minnesota Wild is going to be very interesting to watch carry forward. And you just wonder how much stronger do they get as the year progresses. I wonder how much we saw Saturday night was a Wild team that's going to end up being pretty good as opposed to a Jets team. You know, we're expecting some level of struggle with all the youth and everything, just the way this team's constructed. But was it the Jets not performing at a level we expect them to, or was it maybe more Minnesota sort of imposing their will in a lot of ways?
Yeah, it's got to be a bit of both there, I think, to be totally fair, because I don't really like the makeup of the Wild team, but I just think Bruce Boudreau is, maybe you got one or two coaches above him, maybe, but in terms of at least regular season success for sure, he's the top dog, right? Because, and you're starting to see in Anaheim, too, with a bit of a slow start for them and their possession woes. I mean, nobody saw that coming, so that's pretty interesting. But I look at the Jets' issues here, and they've played two well-coached teams in Carolina and Minnesota for sure, but they're just not able to get into the zone cleanly in terms of the offensive zone of both their opposition so far. They're just having one heck of a time trying to get the puck, never mind over the blue line, but over the red line. Like, there's just a ton of struggle going on right now, and it's just really, to me, that's always the toughest thing to watch. Not even if you have some offensive struggle here and there, I get that. That happens throughout the course of a season. But if you're unable to even break in cleanly to the opposition zone, I mean, that just
how about when you're on the power
trouble.
Play and that's the deal? Like, the Jets' first power play in the first period, that they surrendered two or three glorious scoring opportunities on that power play, which I'll use some air quotes with. You talk about the 5-on-5 trouble with entry. They were having equally as much difficulty with that on the power play, just slow sort of making their way out through the neutral zone, and the Wild are doing a great job of plugging things up. And as that game progressed, especially in that third period there, a great job of plugging things up and just stifling any sort of progress in that neutral zone, making it darn near impossible for easy entry. And then when they couldn't, of course, right, what do? Dump it in, Minnesota beats you to the puck, and then you're in trouble.
Well, the thing about the reason I think Bruce Boudreau is a good hire is because he's offensive. He likes scoring. He likes to create. He likes to be offensive and get some goals. And that's what I've always said for 10 years with Minnesota is they're a good team. It's just I don't know who's going to score, and I don't know how they're going to score. And so that's why they brought him in, and they get three goals in the third or the second period there to take the lead and the momentum from the Winnipeg Jets. Two shots on goal in the second period, and I was down there at the trip at the XL Energy Center, courtesy of with our winner from the Twin City Takeover, courtesy of takeajaunt.ca, of course, a division of Fast Air, and Brian Sywick and his wife accompanied us down, courtesy of TSN and takeajaunt.ca. But it was so clear that, you know, Minnesota had the momentum, the home opener, and then the Jets get that Ehlers goal, and even the Wild fans that were around us were like, that's a great shot. Yeah. Then Wheeler gets the second one, and they sort of, you could see the old, because that's what Minnesota struggled with, is that down 2-0 often seems like an insurmountable lead for the Wild. But then the second period starts, and it's just all momentum, and then the Jets couldn't get anything going. And then even when they were giving up some goals, as you said, gaining the zone and getting some shots on net, was one of the big things. And then the special teams. And this is a team that we thought, it's two games in. I still think they're going to be pretty good on the power play, but it just wasn't going very well. And the other lineup change I want to talk about, guys, is, and this was the talk amongst our group that went down for the Twin City Takeover and the people on Fast Air's Tank of John Plain, by the way, the talk discussion was why is Line A up on the number one line already? Why is Line A moved around when you had this comfortability sort of in one game in? They wanted to sort of see. And really what I feel like I was saying on Friday's show is, you know, Line A's not going to be handed the power play time, not going to be handed the first line. Like, he's 18 and he's got to sort of find his way as well. And I just didn't think it worked well on that first line with Wheeler and Ehlers.
Really, huh?
Yeah, and then the power play, I don't know. Like, I thought Line A played okay, but it's going to take a while for them to get some chemistry together, and then already jumped up a line.
And I thought that line was the best opportunity that they had, really, of doing anything out there.
He gets really good as the game goes on. Like, Line A in the third periods, in the two games I've seen him play, in the third period, he looks like he's almost dominant out there. But it just sort of takes him a while to, which is understandable for a guy in his first two games in the league.
Yeah, and I don't know how that adds up for him to look, you know, become stronger as the game goes along. But I thought that top line, I thought they did pretty good. And I would like to see him parked out there on the power play. To me, the power play, what's most concerning about it to me is a lack of movement again, and even just simple rotation. And put Line A on that island and have Buff at the top if that's what you're going to do. And then at least it gives you two options instead of everyone just focusing on Buff and there being no movement. The lack of rotation. Watch any of the successful power plays in the NHL for the last number of years, and they rotate. And this has been a constant here with the Jets' power play, and right now it's happening all over again.
Troy, watch any of the average power plays in the NHL. They do this thing. It's really wild and revolutionary, I know, but it's called moving the puck in a manner of setting a certain play up. And people kind of make fun of me because I'm a Flyers fan and I watch a ton of Philly games, but their power play sets up with a purpose. They have set plays and designed movement to set up certain things. Mm-hmm. If anyone could tell me what the Jets' power play sets up, I would love to know. Because it would be the first time that I'm aware that they try and set up any sort of play. It feels like they're out there without a clear goal in mind. Like they're not even out there to set up something, to have a design where, okay, we're going to look with Bufflin at the one-timer here. We're going to crash the net. We're going to look with Wheeler on the half boards to move it over across. Like there's no real set design here. And I think to not put Patrick Laine on that top power play, to me, it's just foolish. It's just foolish because you're wasting maybe the best weapon you have out there on the ice. And even if you don't want to feed him, there's no doubt that the second he's out there, mm-hmm. the defense knows it, the forward on his side of the ice knows it, and you're going to open up a ton more lanes if you have that guy out there, even as a decoy. But right now, when you have either Stafford out on the first power play or Lowry on the first power play, where's the threat there? There's no reason for the defending team to have any sort of, I need to cover that guy. Ooh, Lowry's out there. We got to shadow him.
Stafford on the first power play to me is a remarkable mystery.
Well, I think it gets to the comfortability and the familiarity of what you were talking about. Is they probably have worked together before. They probably have some plays that they want to get going. So that's why those guys are out there first, as opposed to a guy that's literally in his second game in the league. That's what I'm assuming anyway. It is the big show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rowicki on a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. The Boston Bruins are in town. And post-game against the Wild, the 4-3 loss, head coach Paul Maurice did talk about the power play and its struggles in the first two games.
Well, there it is, right? We coming up with some speed together. I think that's something that we don't have to release the puck. We don't have to dump the puck because we have a difficult time, you know, with that possession back again, winning those battles. It's at the end of the day, that would be probably the story of this. There are too many even pucks that we just didn't come up with.
That's the 50-50 battles he's talking about. That's the pucks that you need to sort of win those. That's the want. That's the every coach says the 50-50 battles, you need to win those. And that's coming up with the puck. That's getting the puck back. That's retaining the puck. That's when there's a puck along the wall. That's when there's a puck, you know, in front of the net. That's the fight to get that puck.
Yeah, and I think this is a young team. And when you're talking about some of those battles in the 50-50 situations, I think the Jets will lose their fair share of those throughout the course of this year. When you're talking about want and all the rest of it, and however tired you are, I don't care how tired people are or athletes are, right? Like, that's a barrier you can break through mentally. When I see the first and the third goal by the Minnesota Wild are because of the trailers in those situations and the lack of, I dare anyone to go watch the video right now of Ehlers on that first goal. He's floating back. If he skates his butt back, that goal doesn't happen. And I know Wheeler was caught out on the ice a long time and was coming back at a decent pace, but just another situation there where trailers, to me, the theme of that game for me, why the Jets lost, was because of the trailers and them scoring the first and third goals in that game. The Jets weren't committed enough to go get them.
And I understand where Maurice is going with this when he looks at, yeah, they probably lost a bunch of board battles out there on the power play when they dumped the puck in, but to me, that's the issue right there.
Yeah.
If you dump the puck in, that's a failed power play entry. You're not good enough. To me, that's your absolute last resort, and it shouldn't be a consistent approach when you have the man advantage. NHL teams borderline should be able to break in close to at will on the power play Whether or not you're successful once you set up, that's a totally separate issue. But the fact that this team for 5 years, 6 years, maybe outside of 1 year, the first year where they had a good power play at home, but to not even be able to gain clean entries into the zone time and time again, I mean, that's just hockey 101 right there.
The only thing I'll say is, in watching this game, I was trying to come to an understanding of how much of that was sort of a lack of ability on the Jets to gain that clear entry, and how much is that the Wild has maybe a pretty good team early on, Bruce, with the effect of Bruce Boudreaux, and be very wary of the Wild. I wonder.
Yeah, I mean, Boudreaux is going to have an effect on this team. And
they were a good team before he arrived, really, right? Like,
well, they're
were just
a playoff
a solid
team, for
team.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, so he's that much more oomph here for the Wild.
Gentlemen, I got to talk about this trip that we went on and congratulate once again our winner, Daniel Sywick, and it was TSN 1290 and Fast Air's Twin City Takeover. So Saturday, we went to Fast Air's hangar just off Ness for 1 o'clock, had some snacks, some wine, like I know.
Okay.
Some bevies, some cheese, uh-huh. Some fruit.
Sounds
I was looking for the Doritos,
shelf, huh?
But I had those on the plane.
Uh-huh.
Top shelf stuff. We leave at 1:30. About an hour and 20 minutes later, we land in downtown St. Paul, Minnesota's airport. It's a 10-minute drive to the arena. So we get to the arena. We do some tailgating. We then go inside. We have something to eat. Game starts. Watch the game. Minnesota Wild fans are loving us because you guys are, Daniel Sywick and his wife are there, our contest winners, and another lovely couple from Verdun, and they got their Jets gear on. Daniel's got his Bufflin jersey on. And of course, they're all like, oh, we wanted him to sign here this offseason and come home, but we love him. They're giving us the gears and all that, but it's all in good fun. And of course, they're just blown away that the fact that we flew down on a private jet.
Yeah,
like,
no
they're
kidding.
Like, who are these guys?
Yeah.
And I'm like, don't worry, my tax receipt doesn't reflect the private jet. It's courtesy of our good friends at Fast Air and TakeAJaunt.ca. So then the game ends. We're back at the airport within 10 minutes and in the air again, and we land back home at 11:30. So they have several of these flights that they're going to cater to going forward to sporting events. They have a Vikings-Cardinals game coming up. They got a Boston Bruins-Minnesota Wild game coming up. They're going to take you to or can take you to the Packers-Seahawks battle on December 11th. And, of course, the Masters. They're throwing together a Masters trip. And the key to this, gentlemen, is that they fly you right in there. So you were in the St. Paul, Minnesota, 10 minutes from the rink. Green Bay is the same thing. If you want to go to a Packers game and fly, you can't get directly into Green Bay.
Gee,
so if you're interested in this at all, I highly suggest that they treated us so well. I probably will never live like this again. It was such a great flight. TakeAJaunt.ca. And once again, congratulations to our winner here at TSN 1290, Daniel Sywick and his wife, who went along and had a very good time and sported, I will say this, proudly through the Minnesota Wild XL Energy Center, proudly donned the Dustin Bufflin jersey.
Sounds like a lot of fun, man.
And it was amazing how many Wild fans love Dustin Bufflin, except for when he's playing against him. He's a proud Minnesotan.
Yeah.
So by all means, check that out if you want. TakeAJaunt.ca. We'll take a break here, and we'll get into the ALCS. I did not see the Toronto Blue Jays losing both games in Cleveland, but that's exactly what they did. We'll get into the American League Championship Series next on The Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The 27 Canada Summer Games are coming to Winnipeg, and TSN 1290 is a proud media sponsor of the Games. All eyes will be on Winnipeg next summer. Over 4,000 athletes from across Canada come to compete, featuring 16 sports and over 250 events. The 50th anniversary of the Canada Summer Games will welcome over 20,000 visitors, making it a can't-miss event. Volunteer registration is now open. To stay up to date on event details, ticket offers, and more, visit 2017canadagames.ca or TSN1290.ca. The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki on a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day as the Boston Bruins come to town for Game 3 of the season versus the Winnipeg Jets. We'll talk more about that in the next hour. But the ALCS saw the Toronto Blue Jays lose 2-0 on Friday night against Corey Kluber and the Cleveland Indians. They just couldn't get anything going offensively. And then on Saturday night, it was a 2-1 loss. The Jays have only managed one run in two games, and Blue Jays manager John Gibbons had this message, or said this was the message to his team after only scoring one run in two games in the ALCS.
There's no hidden message. I don't think that you can, and we are what we are. You know, we've run into a couple tough right-handers who, and right-handers like them have you know, caused us troubles throughout this year, you know, that for the way they pitch. So, but our guys will be ready. What that means, we'll find out, but they'll be ready.
You can't really overcoach. Don't you love Gibbons? Well, they're pretty good pitching, and we'll
that,
see what we can
what
do.
What that means, well, what did he
yeah,
well,
I'll play. I'll play the end there because it just doesn't make any sense.
But our guys will be ready. What that means, we'll find out, but they'll be ready.
It's just like when he walked out to J.A. Happ after three innings during September. In Tampa, what are we going to do? Clemson, got to pull you. What do you do? What a beauty John Gibbons is. But your impressions of the lack of offense, and is it struggling at the plate in this series, or is it the great pitching the Cleveland Indians have done?
Yeah, I think it's important. Well, we've seen the up and down, the hot and cold of the Blue Jays, right? So, certainly everyone remembers September, and then everything just sort of clicked for them when October started. But I think it's also important to remember that Boston was completely eviscerated their offense by Cleveland. So what we've seen here early on from Tomlin and from Kluber, with the accent and the assistance of Miller and Allen, and you know, the second best bullpen in the bigs this year, it shouldn't be surprising anyone. Anyone that saw any of the Red Sox series or were keeping up with that series, Cleveland took care of them in a hurry, and their offense was more productive and more constant and steady than what we've seen from the Blue Jays this year. So I don't think we should be surprised, and I think Blue Jays fans can sort of tap into whatever it was that Gibbons says there, that they'll be ready. We don't really know what that means, but they'll be ready, and let's just hope that they can start making some contact here.
Yeah, I mean, game one against Kluber, I'll hand that one to Cleveland, right? Like, that's a tough matchup for a lot of teams, and then you got the bullpen going the way they are. But, man, game two really pissed me off. That was to me, that was the most difficult one to watch. Just because, and I get swinging for the fences is kind of their MO and all that sort of thing, but there's certain times where
maybe don't
swing 150.
But this is what they do all the time.
Right? I get
and
that.
And then you hear this foolish, that's what they are, all that crap.
I get that, right? Like, I get that in certain spots. Right, with no men on and two outs, maybe you swing for the fences trying to get one going there. Like there's a time and a place really for that, but there was a few instances where you got guys on base, and this happened in game one where runners, I mean, this is kind of the Jays' MO when they lose, right? They get guys in scoring position, they just don't drive them in very often. And the problem I have with that is you're not even putting the ball in play half the time. And Jose Bautista can whine and cry about how little the strike zone is, and were they getting all the calls? No, they didn't get a ton of calls. But at the same time, Jose, you're not making contact on any of these pitches. Like you're not even putting at least give yourself a chance and put the ball in play some of the time.
But this argument could be used at any point in time for the most part this season, last season the same thing, right? And this is Blue Jays baseball under the leadership of Gibbons, and it doesn't seem like they try to be any more intelligent in situational senses at the plate. They just stand there and wail away.
Well, and it could also be he just knows that they are these guys, and I know you'd like to see guys bunt and be taught that, but if you're winning games and this is who you are, and why try and reinvent the wheel? I guess that's their philosophy.
Well, because playoff time, that this is, it's hard to keep dropping bombs over the wall, and that's going to be I live and die by that, right?
Well, Andrew Miller that's the guy that you have to have a lead before he comes in or you're in big trouble. He's a guy that was a great acquisition by the Cleveland Indians. If you're going to bounce back, Trevor Bauer's the guy to do it for. He was delayed because he hurt his finger fixing a drone. And now he's postponed, and we'll talk about that much later because I'm like, dude, can you not play with your drones until after the play? Can you wait a week? Maybe 1 week to play with your drones. But we'll talk about that as the show goes on as well. The Mercedes-Benz Power Hour is up next. Lots of Jets talk to get to. Dennis Bayek will join us, and Mr. Ian Mendez next on The Big Show. TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
TSN 1290, iHeartRadio, and Robertson College are sending one winner and a guest to Toronto to experience a trip of a lifetime November 24th to the 27th. First, you'll see the first ever iHeartRadio Jingle Ball Friday, November 25th at Toronto's Air Canada Centre, featuring big names like The Weeknd, The Chainsmokers, Headley, and more. Then you'll stick around and watch the 104th Grey Cup Sunday, November 27th at BMO Field. The trip will include return airfare, four nights hotel and TO, plus two suite seats to both events. To enter, simply text iHeartRadio to 54321 or send in your entry at tsn1290.ca. One random winner will be selected Monday, November 14th to receive the prize. For more info on Jingle Bell artists and all the other biggest names in music, download the iHeartRadio app today or learn more at iHeartRadio.ca. The Big Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki on our Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. The Boston Bruins are in town. The Winnipeg Jets 1-1 after a 4-3 loss in Minnesota on the weekend. They'll look to get back on track against the Bruins tonight. To talk a little hockey and everything else, and specifically some baseball, we welcome back into the program Mr. Ian Mendez. How are you, sir?
Hey, guys. I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing very well today, and Ian, of course, is with our affiliate station, TSN 1200 in Ottawa, and I guess we'll start with the Jays, and we were discussing it in our last segment, and just one run in two games and the pitching of the Cleveland Indians, and if only all the Cleveland pitchers could be into drones, this might have gone differently for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, the drone, unfortunately for the Jays, you figured the drone story would play into their advantage, and instead, Josh Tomlin comes in and pitches really well in game two, and you're hoping you'll probably see some funny drone-related signs tonight when Trevor Bauer takes the hill. But, you know, guys, the thing that I'm finding real eye-opening here is the comments made by Jose Bautista yesterday, basically blaming the umpires, playing the conspiracy card of, well, we're not getting the calls at the plate. And, you know, that is often the sign of desperation that kind of, I think Bautista's comments yesterday give you a window into the frustration / desperation that this group is feeling, that, to only manufacture one run in 18 innings of baseball after they were so explosive offensively in that series against Texas, it's a head-scratcher. And I think they're trying to look for some reasons for it. And I think sometimes in the absence of just admitting that you're not, producing in the big spots, it's better to come up with some other unknown reason as to why you might not be doing what you're doing. And in the case of Bautista, he's blaming the umpires. But the troubling thing here, guys, the troubling thing to me is this isn't just Bautista that's struggling. Edwins looked bad. Russell Martin has really struggled. You know, they've gotten a couple of hits from Josh Donaldson here in this series, but really his power game seems to have really been limited with whatever injury he's dealing with there, that quad or whatever. Like, he doesn't feel like a home run threat every time he comes up. Bautista feels like it's feast or famine. He's going to take it out of the park or he's going to strike out. And this is the problem. They're now going into a situation tonight where essentially this is a must-win ball game for this team. We've only seen, I think, one team ever come back from 0-3 in the ALCS. So let's be honest here. This is a must-win game for the Blue Jays tonight, and their offense has produced one run in 18 innings.
Do you think maybe fans of the Blue Jays were a little bit asleep at the wheel and underestimating what the pitching staff for Cleveland was capable, especially after they mowed down Boston?
Yeah, I think so for sure. And I think a lot of Jays fans probably came into this series feeling really confident. And I mean, I guess rightfully so, because I think handicapping the American League coming into the postseason, didn't we all think that the Red Sox were the team to beat? I think everyone figured Boston was the best team. Maybe Texas was two. And then I think a lot of Toronto fans felt like the Jays were maybe the third best team. I don't think Cleveland got a ton of respect. And here we are with the Indians, and they lost a couple of big arms down the stretch in Salazar and Carrasco. And even, I mean, there was that big column written by the columnist in Cleveland at the end of September saying, well, the Indians are done. They've had too many injuries, and that's the end of them. And I think that was the sentiment around a lot of Jays fans, thinking that, you know what, the Indians are the easiest path to get to the World Series. And now you're starting to understand that this team this is where they remind me of the Royals last year. There's not really one particular guy in the lineup that's going to torch you. There's not really like the front of the line dominant starter that's going to shut you out. But boy, oh boy, do they play good fundamental baseball, and they have a deep bullpen with Andrew Miller coming in there that all of a sudden it's kind of a 6 or 7 inning game for the starters instead of having to go super deep. So, yeah, I think that there was an element of being a little bit overconfident from the Jays' perspective. I'm not saying the players, but certainly maybe the fan base that has been recorrected here after two games of this series.
Given that they're down 2-0, Ian, do you like the pitching rotation as it's set up now? And it's worked out with Bauer going tonight, but with Marcus Stroman and Aaron Sanchez down 2-0 the next two pitchers.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, again, this is less about the pitching and more about the hitting for the Jays because, really, if you had told me before the start of this series that the Blue Jays would have given up 4 runs total in 2 games and walked away with no wins, I wouldn't have believed that. I mean, really, to the starting pitching here, Estrada's been good. Hap was okay in Game 2. That really wasn't the problem. The problem is the bats. But, you know, Stroman has shown, and I'm curious to see how he does, because remember, he didn't pitch in the ALDS against Texas because they ended up sweeping them. And this is a situation where Stroman really hasn't pitched in a while, because I think the last game he would have pitched was that play-in game against Baltimore. So you're talking about basically a two-week stretch here where Stroman hasn't really pitched. But the one thing we know about Marcus Stroman is the kid seems to rise to the occasion and take these opportunities in Toronto to feed off the crowd, and the crowd feeds off him. So I like Stroman in that spot tonight. I like Sanchez tomorrow because I still think he's been their ace. And that's the one where tomorrow, if they lose that game tomorrow, regardless of today's scenario, I mean, to have it set up where tomorrow is Aaron Sanchez, who arguably is this team's ace, up against Cleveland, who's essentially going to use what they Francona's coined a bullpen day, because, again, they had those injuries to starters down the stretch. That game is so heavily tilted in their favor that I don't see how they don't win that game. I mean, really, Cleveland's going to use 3 or 4 pitchers tomorrow as a bullpen day. Clevinger, who's likely going to start, is only going to go 3 innings. I think that this sets up well. But again, if Stroman can get the job done today, I really do think that things are tipped significantly in their favor, at least in Game 4 tomorrow.
How intrigued are you with what's happening in Toronto with Matthews and Marner and the rest of the young crew?
Oh, I think it's fantastic for the game. I really do. And I know that a lot of people look at the Maple Leafs and either there's no real gray area with the Maple Leafs. I think in this country, you're either you grew up loving the Leafs or hating the Leafs. And it's very hard to be objective about them because of their fan base, because of everything, the kind of the media hype that goes around them. But if you can, for a moment, just stand on the fence and look at this objectively, this is terrific for the game. You're looking, and I was in the arena the other night, guys, when Austin Matthews scored the 4 goals. And, you know, when he scored the first one, we thought, okay, well, what a great start for the kid. But after that, it just got to the point where, like, they might end up being, just because of that one game, must-see TV for the rest of the season, at least for a lot of hockey fans, because you don't know what's going to happen. And really, when's the last time? I mean, the Maple Leafs have had some high first-round picks over the years, but all of them, for whatever reason, Alex Steen and Carlo Koliakovo, and, you know, go through the list of Brad Boys. There's been a bunch of them that just don't materialize. And a lot of people just blame the Toronto media and the pressure and the kids wilt under it. This Austin Matthews is cut from a completely different cloth. I mean, he is just as cool and as calm as can be. And that's the one thing I noticed the other night when he was in Ottawa. You watch the way he reacted to the goals, guys. It was just like, no big deal. You know, I just scored a hat trick in my first game. I'm not even going to pump my fist. And that, the kid just has the ice water in his veins. I think he's got the right DNA to handle this. And then you add in, and here's the beauty, if you're Mitch Marner, you're not even the guy. In the past, maybe Mitch Marner would have been the guy, but now he gets to slide in really nicely behind Austin Matthews, and this kid might be more offensively gifted than Austin Matthews. I'm not sure he's as complete a player, but it's a lot of fun to watch. I think it really is, and I think Marner has the ability. I'm not saying he will be, but I'm saying he's got the ability to maybe be a Patrick Kane, Johnny Gaudreau type of guy. He's that fun to watch. And this is going to be, again, a season in which I think the Leafs, for the first time in a long time, you can actually sit down, and even if you don't have a rooting interest in them, you might even be interested to sit down and watch them because the entertainment factor might be pretty good.
I'm talking with Ian Mendez of TSN 1200 in Ottawa on the big show today, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. It is a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. The Boston Bruins are in town. Ian, the Ottawa Senators are 2-0 on the season. What have you liked about them so far?
Well, I mean, for Ottawa, they've won two games, both against pretty big rivals here, in one against Toronto, one against Montreal. But in both cases, they've been a little bit sloppy. Obviously, when you give up four goals to a guy like Austin Matthews in his NHL debut, you're going to have done something wrong. So defensively, they didn't look all that good in that game. But in the last game against the Habs, they looked a lot better. Even though they blew a third-period lead, they came back and won that game. This is a bit of a work in progress for this team. They've missed the playoffs 2 out of 3 years, and Guy Boucher is preaching that it's going to take some time to show some structure and stability with this team. But I've liked what they do they've done offensively. But again, that might be a product of the early part of this season. I don't know what you guys have thought, but my goodness, the first 4 or 5 days of the NHL season, this has almost felt a touch of like the 80s a little bit, where you get a lot of these kind of high-scoring games. Even yesterday, the Buffalo-Edmonton game, I think Buffalo got 6 goals. Like, you often don't see this in December, January, February. But I like it, and I think Ottawa offensively has been great. Carlson's got 4 points in the first 2 games. He's looked kind of like the Erik Karlsson you would expect. And that's, to me, what I like is, like, I like it when teams like Ottawa that have some offensive talent are able to use them and show them off. So at the very least, these 2 games have been pretty entertaining, but they got the Red Wings in Detroit tonight, so that might be a different story for the Jets.
You follow him on Twitter at Ian_Mendez, and you can hear him on TSN 1200 in Ottawa. Ian, thanks for doing this, and have a great week.
Sounds great, guys. My pleasure.
Thanks, so much, brother. Take care.
We'll take a break and talk some more Jets, as it is a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. They will host the Boston Bruins tonight. And also, your chance to qualify for the ultimate Winnipeg Jets game day experience is next on The Big Show, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
This is The Big Show podcast on tsn1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
It is The Big Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruicki. It is a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day as the Jets host the Boston Bruins to kick off 3 in a row at home. And TSN 1290's ultimate Winnipeg Jets game day experience is your chance to qualify right now. We want you to witness a Winnipeg Jets game like never before. Listen for your chance to qualify Monday through Friday at 7:15, 8:15, 12:15, and 5:15, or enter online at tsn1290.ca for your chance to win a bonus entry. Everyone who qualifies will score a Jets gear gift card. 780-1290 is your chance to get in on the action. One grand prize winner at the end of it all will also receive a deluxe VIP suite for you and 9 friends at the Winnipeg Jets home game versus the Nashville Predators on Saturday, April 8th at the MTS Center. Access for you and a guest at the Winnipeg Jets morning skate alongside TSN 1290 broadcast team. Game gear for you and your crew, courtesy of Royal Sports. A bonus hockey swag, including an official Budweiser red light, a copy of Hockey News' new book, The Greatest Game I Ever Played, 40 Tales of Hockey Brilliance, and a Winnipeg Jets team-signed jersey. In-game shoutouts at the MTS Center for you and your crew will also be a part of the package. A guest appearance on The Big Show the day before the game on Friday, April 7th. A guest appearance on the Winnipeg Jets pregame show at Boston Pizza on the 8th. Dinner for you and 9 of your sweet guests at Boston Pizza before the game on the 8th, plus much more added as we'll continue to go along and get closer to the big day. Full contest details again online at tsn1290.ca. The grand prize winner will be announced Monday, November 7th, right here on The Big Show. Gentlemen, the Jets lose 4-3 in Minnesota and now turn their attention to a 3-game homestand hosting the Boston Bruins tonight as that gets started. The week for them, I should say.
Yeah, and hopefully get back on track here. An interesting game in Minnesota. You wonder what some of the changes might be with personnel tonight and the impact here. But the Jets need to kind of sort of take a step back maybe towards basics here. And just especially when you're talking about the level of puck possession right now has got to be a concern for them going forward. I think maybe what we saw in Minnesota was a team that's going to be considerably better than what a lot of people think. And we'll just get another measuring stick tonight against a Boston team.
Yeah, I think for the first time this season, though, this is a team, and especially a blue line that the Jets can take advantage of. You know, the first couple of games, yeah, Carolina is a really underrated team, in my opinion, even though they've had a couple of tough games to start out this season. But they've got a very good blue line. Minnesota, with a Bruce Boudreau behind the bench, they're going to be well-coached and disciplined. And not that Claude Julien isn't that kind of guy, but just look what he has to work with right now on the back end. I mean, you have Zdeno Chara, who's on the 19th hole of his career. You know, he's
wow.
it's almost sad watching the kind of devolution of a player who was once a great.
He's having a coffee listening to this right now.
Yeah, well, it's not going to help him tonight. And you have beside him Brandon Carlo. I don't know if he's going to play or not, but a young guy there who's kind of still feeling his way through the NHL. And just guys that the Jets should be able to take advantage of with their speed. The forwards should be able to have a bit of a field day at least. And I don't know if Tuukka Rask is going to play either or not, because he dealt with a little bit of an injury. Didn't play there Saturday in Toronto. So this is a game I'm going to be very interested in to see if the Jets can kind of push themselves back closer to maybe even a break-even battle when you talk terms of Corsi and puck possession. And then just to see if the process and how they go about the game is much, much more sound than the first two games, where I think they are very lucky to have 7 goals so far scored for them.
Is it back to Connor Hellebuck tonight in your guys' mind?
Wouldn't surprise me. I just wonder how much they're going to bounce back and forth. Is it just going to be game for game for game for game? I wouldn't even. I kind of go on Sheriff Knighty on Shane Knighty on this one, where you know I don't know what the intent is of Paul Maurice here. I thought Hutch played a pretty good game outside of the Dumba goal from the point. I thought that he played pretty good, so it wouldn't surprise me either way.
Yeah, I mean, I said before the season that you kind of split these first 4 games up for both guys either way. So I don't really care, to be totally honest with you. You kind of wonder, though, you know, with the way Toronto's looked so far this season, if you know, maybe you don't put your best guy in the net for that one coming up later this week. I wonder that a little bit. But to be honest here, I think both goalies are going to get a start in one of these next 2 games here. So which one?
I tell you what, man, if you're starting your best goalie from what we've seen, like with regular season anyway, I thought Hutch played better than Hellebuck in his first game out in the regular season.
I think they go Hellebuck tonight. I think they go Hutchinson on Wednesday against the Toronto Maple Leafs, and then I think Hellebuck gets the outdoor game. By the way, TSN 1290's live coverage of the Jets Oilers alumni game at IGF begins at noon Saturday. Puck drop at 3 on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Next Sunday, our all-day live coverage of the Jets Oilers IGF outdoor game begins at 11 a.m. Puck drop is at 2 on your home of the Winnipeg Jets. Once again, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. What about the lineup tonight? Chris Thorburn, Mark Stewart draws back in. Head coach Paul Maurice yesterday after practice saying that he would like some more offense, some more scoring. Blake Wheeler saying he'd like the team to be better defensively. Who do you put in this lineup? Do you go back to the original lineup against Carolina, or do you float this same crew that went out to Minnesota on Saturday in mini?
I don't know what they do in the back end here and how they're going to manage the whole Stewart-Sherratt thing with Postmont on the right, but it was I'm right there with Wicks where that's going to be sort of something that bounces around a little bit, who they end up settling on in that 5-6 spot. I was surprised with the changes that happened because they won that game, and then you're going against a divisional rival. But if Joel Armia is not in the lineup tonight, it's something approaching a crime of some sort. There's no way he should have been taken out. I would be shocked if he wasn't put back in tonight.
No, because I kind of hate having to rail on him all the time, but what does Chris Thorburn give you night in and night out that Joel Armia can't do better than him outside of the fighting department? And even then, we haven't seen Joel Armia drop the gloves, so I don't know what can happen there. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sorry, but just...
Well, just more physicality, too. It's not
yeah,
just...
And, but he's...
Here's the thing, guys, about Chris Thorburn. He does more than just drop the gloves. He's very fast. He's a big body. He can forecheck. There are aspects of his game are more than just dropping the gloves. And we sit here and we talk about, like, he's Anthony Peluso and draw...
He plays 6 minutes a game, though.
Well, no,
if he does all these things, then why is he getting three shifts a period.
But to sit here, that's what he can do. He's a big body guy who plays physical, and he can kill the odd penalty if need be.
Do you think he should have been put in for Armia?
No, I would have gone with Armia. I would have gone with the exact same lineup that they had against Carolina. I'm just saying that when we talk here, what is he going to do? That's what he does. But yeah, I played Joel Armia. I wouldn't have changed the lineup. Mm-hmm. So
it was strange, yeah.
We'll talk more about this tonight's game and the Jets and their loss in Mini on Saturday with the face of the Winnipeg Jets on TSN 3 and one of the voices here in 1290, Mr. Dennis Bayak, next on The Big Show.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290, an iHeartRadio station. We're bringing a series of big and small events with artists to Canada, giving fans experiences money can't buy. It's going to change the way you listen to the radio forever. Download the free app today. The Big Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca, on a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets at game day with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruicki, as the Boston Bruins come to town as the Jets kick off 3 at home, 2 at the MTS Center, and 1 outdoors on Sunday. It's a big week for the Winnipeg Jets at this early juncture of the season. And to talk about them, we bring in the face of the Winnipeg Jets on TSN 3 and one of the voices here on TSN 1290 and tsn1290.ca, Mr. Dennis Bayak. How are you?
Gentlemen, I'm good. How was the weekend?
It was good. I made it down to Mini.
Did you? Good man.
Yeah, I was there. I took in the XL Energy Center. Loved the arena. Loved the atmosphere. Thought it was a great start for the Jets. And
thanks for dropping by.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. Dennis, I don't know if you know, but I went with takeajaunt.ca, a Carntest winner, so I flew in on a private jet. I didn't have time to come see you, okay?
Oh, Mr. Big Shot here.
Yeah, so we limoed from the airport right to the rink and then back to the airport again, and then I had to get on the jet.
Well,
so.
We took the bus to the rink, so...
I will have you know, though, that you beat us home, because when we landed at Fast Air's hangar just off Ness, we drove by the Jets plane, and the pilot did say, he goes, oh, the Jets beat us home.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, and that's when I said, well, this is unacceptable.
Maybe your post-game celebrations were a little more intense than what ours were.
I would think so. To me, I expected the Wild to come out like that, being their home opener. I thought it was great of the Jets to take that late first-period lead, and then the second period is sort of when I was not too impressed with what took place, and I imagine the Jets weren't either.
No, they weren't. I mean, we expected the push from... from the Minnesota Wild to start that second period. They had lost their previous game. The coach skated them hard the day before, and we expected some of that in the opening period and didn't really see a whole lot of it. Although, take away the two goals at the end, the first period was probably fairly equal, and the Jets managed to get a couple. So, I think the expectation was that the Wild would have a little bit of a snarl to them in the second period, and they did. And then once they got rolling, defensively they were very good. And I think we just heard the clip there from Blake Wheeler. Offensively, I think the Jets just didn't create enough and didn't make the night difficult enough for the Minnesota Wild.
Some thoughts maybe do you have on how the Jets could help to more or less prolong and maintain puck possession in the offensive zone?
Well, some of that's going to come. I mean, you've got 4 new forwards, 3 rookies, and a rookie on the back end. But, I think eventually, once we see some consistency in the line combinations, and it went out the window in game one because of the injury to Brian Little, and then it kind of went out the window in game two as they tried to find some combinations that could create some of that offense and keep some of that pressure in the Minnesota zone. So some of that is just going to happen automatically as these young players get used to each other and get used to the National Hockey League. And as much as you can go through preseason and training camp and everything else, when the NHL starts for real, this is all new to these players. And in Sean Mathias's case, it's a new system, and he missed most of training camp. So, that's going to take a while for him to get used to these players. So some of that's going to happen, and some of that got worked on yesterday, and some of that will continue to get worked on. Be a little patient. If you got an opportunity to shoot the puck, shoot the puck, hit the net, create a rebound, and just some of the little things that sometimes you forget about and try to get too fancy. You've got players that are new to the league that I think have to get used to shooting the puck in if they have the opportunity, don't always look to pass it. So some of that's just going to happen with more games under their belt here, I think.
Joel Armia and Ben Chiarot were taken out of the lineup on Saturday. Chris Thorburn and Mark Stewart were put into the lineup. And Paul Maurice, prior to the game, talked about the tough decision it was to sit down Thorburn and Stewart in the game opener. And we all know that they sent Andre Pavlik down. Can you maybe expand just a little bit on how tough this is for Maurice to sort of make these decisions as this team slowly transitions into this younger, faster team?
I can't even imagine how that meeting went on Saturday or on Thursday when he had that chat with Mark Stewart and Chris Thorburn and told them that that they weren't going to be in the lineup for opening night. It's a tough decision, one that he felt had to be made on the simple fact that he felt Ben Chiarot had a good training camp, Joel Armia had a good training camp, and they deserve to be in the starting lineup. Take that one day further. He wants everybody to kind of feel a part of this. And the game in Minnesota, the belief was that there would be some snarl from the Wild, and maybe we need a little more veteran presence in that lineup, including Chris Thorburn, who did have the scrap in the game. But that would have been a very, very difficult decision. The easiest thing would have just been to sit a couple of younger guys and play those two guys. And I think it was another just good example of how difficult sometimes decisions are for head coaches, because you're dealing with two guys that have been part of this organization for a long time.
Do you think the Jets are going to be able to survive? And by saying that, I mean hover around 500 here with the critical loss of Brian Little. Can they overcome or sort of maintain the course with that?
Well, it's not going to be easy just because of all the things that Brian Little brings. You just don't, I mean, if teams are never, I mean, if you can find a team that's really, really deep at center, boy, that's a benefit. You know, and to lose a centerman is not easy, especially the way they had it structured last year at times when they had Matthew Perreault over on the wing. It was just a simple case of slide Matthew Perreault into the middle and away you go. You know, and now the way they've got it structured, at least had it structured at the start of the year, was that Shifley, Little, and Matthew Perreault were going to be their top three centers. Adam Lowry would be that fourth center, and away they go from there. So they were really happy with the depth they had up the middle, and all of a sudden you take away the guy that's a right-hand shot, that's your number one face-off guy, kills penalties, plays the power play, plays five-on-five, can play against the other team's best. You know, but he's gone. He's gone for a while by the looks of it. This is not day-to-day. It's week-to-week for Brian Little. So, you know, you can't sit here and feel sorry for yourself. You have to move on, and some of that responsibility for faceoffs now is going to fall on Mark Scheifele. It's going to fall on Adam Lowry. But where it does become a bit of an issue is, and they had it the other night, Mark Scheifele is in getting a skate fixed, and you have no other right-hand centerman now to take the faceoff. You know, so they've slipped Alexander Bromistrov back into the middle, someplace where he has played in the past, but not a lot. You know, so it's going to be a chore, and but that's, you know, that's what stories are made of. That's where you see the maturity of players. And Mark Scheifele and Adam Lowry and all the rest of the guys, they're ready for the challenge. It's just going to take them a little while. Their faceoffs got better in Minnesota than what they were opening night against Carolina. So it's a work in progress with them. But you have no options. I mean, you don't find a veteran centerman kicking around, you know, not working. So it's going to be up to the young guys to fill the void.
Bertrand Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're teeing it up for you with Mr. Dennis Bayak of TSN 3 and TSN 1290. The Boston Bruins come to town. Dennis, what challenge do they present to this young Jets team?
Well, again, you got a team coming off a game that didn't play very well. You got a banged-up Boston Bruins team. But you had a banged-up Buffalo Sabres team that went into Edmonton last night, too. So, you know, I think the Jets are very cognizant of that fact. But, you know, you still have some guys on that Boston team that know how to play. And it's a veteran team in ways. Tuukka Rask will probably get the start because he didn't play on Saturday. So there's a challenge right there for you to try and get pucks past him. But it's an opportunity to take advantage of a team that is missing some guys. But they've added David Backes, and you know, along with Pastrnak, and Brad Marchand appears to be a very good line. They had a dynamite night in the opener against Columbus, not such a great night in Toronto for game two with everything that was going on in Toronto. But you still got the big man back on defense. It's become a very more of a mobile back end for the Boston Bruins than, you know, than maybe what they've been in the past. But it's an opportunity for the Jets to take advantage of a team that is missing some guys and maybe early in the year here going through some growing pains, just like other teams are, including the Winnipeg Jets.
Dennis, with this lengthy injury to Brian Little, is it fair to say that this is the final audition for an upcoming RFA with this organization and Alexander Burmistrov?
Well, I think so. I mean, we asked Paul Maurice on Saturday how big of a game this was for Alexander Burmistrov going into that game Saturday, and he said very big. I mean, Burmistrov has always wanted to be a centerman, thinks he can be an offensive centerman. That's what he believes he is, and now he'll be given the opportunity over the next number of games to show that. And, you know, again, we're not going to make the judgment, as the organization isn't. They're not going to make the judgment after one game. They're not going to make the judgment after two games. Let him get his feet wet in there. Let him get a little bit comfortable. Let him get used to whoever he's playing with and give him a fair opportunity here to see whether or not he can be that guy. And if he can't be that guy, if he can't fill that void at center, then they're going to have to look elsewhere, and then that'll probably be going down to the Manitoba Moose and find out who's playing well there and make a bit of a change. But that's not going to happen, I don't think, over the next two, three games, four games. I think they're going to give him the opportunity to prove that he can be what he thinks he can be. And it's an opportunity for him. He has to grab it, run with it. And this will be one, it could be one of those situations where you look back years gone by and say, I took advantage of the fact that there was an injury, they gave me an opportunity, and I grabbed the bull by the horns and I ran with it.
Do you feel the Jets go back to Connor Hellebuck tonight in net, or how does this week play out? Are they going to go back and forth for a couple games here and sort of see who takes it?
Well, interesting. I mean, Connor Hellebuck's first win and first or second NHL shutout came in Minnesota, so you thought maybe they would go back with him. And Michael Hutchinson's a former Bruin, and his first NHL win was against Boston. So maybe that would have been the rotation. And when that didn't happen, now you think we're just going to see a simple rotation. So I would not be surprised. I would expect Connor Hellebuck to be back in tonight, Michael Hutchinson on Wednesday, and so on down the line, at least for a while. Just you kind of get the feeling that they want to have a real good look at both of these goaltenders, give them both the opportunity to be a number one guy. And if you want to give them that opportunity, they have to play. So I think there will come a time later this season where performance and simple winning will keep you in the net. But I'm not sure that's going to happen for a while, because I firmly believe, and they have to do this, they have to find out what they have in Connor Hellebuck and Michael Hutchinson, and a simple rotation for now, you know, barring a little tweak here or a back-to-back situation or whatever the case may be, but I think we'll see a pretty good rotation between the two netminders for now.
Thanks for this, as always, Dennis, and have a great call tonight.
You guys have a good day. It's a big week here in Winnipeg with everything that's going on. You got the Leafs in town, you got the Moose opener, you got the outdoor game, everything else. It's a big week. Enjoy it.
Thanks so much, Dennis. Take care.
It's going to be a big week indeed, and a lot of fun. And once again, TSN 1290 live coverage of the Jets Oilers alumni game at IGF begins at noon next Saturday. Puck drops at 3 on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Then on Sunday, our all-day live coverage of the Jets Oilers IGF outdoor game begins at 11 a.m. Puck drop is at 2. We'll take a break and continue on with the Mercedes-Benz Power Hour on The Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and MTS want to help you celebrate the classic in Winnipeg. Listen all week long for your cue to call and qualify to win an exclusive Heritage Classic prize package, two awesome Heritage Classic hoodies, two awesome Heritage Classic tees, collector's mini sticks and patches, and a couple of retro Jets toques. and scarves. Presented by MTS, proud to be an official partner of your Winnipeg Jets. We're with you. If you're a fan, you're a legend. Join the conversation at hashtag legendary loyalty and your home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Werwicki on a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. The Boston Bruins are in town. Husser and Lawless kick it off live at 3 o'clock from Boston Pizza City Place, followed by the Manitoba Building Trades Winnipeg Jets pregame show with Mr. Rick Ralph at 6 o'clock. Puck drop. Paul Edmonds, Brian Munns have the call as the Bruins are in town, is at 7, followed by the Huron Windows Winnipeg Jets postgame show. Let's talk about Alexander Burmistrov. Got into the lineup yesterday. Great questions about Brian Little to Dennis Bayak, Troy, in my mind, because as I said prior to his injury, I think he's one of the most underrated centers, not only on this team, but in the entire National Hockey League. It's a big loss for the Winnipeg Jets, and Burmistrov draws back into the lineup on Saturday night. Your impressions of his game?
Oh, he had an ugly turnover. I think it was in the first period where he tries to carry the puck up, and it was a little bit congested in the neutral zone. There was a number of other Jets sort of standing around waiting for him, and just a real ugly turnover that came right back and led to a scoring chance. He had a little bit over 14 minutes of ice time and wasn't real noticeable in any sort of positive way. Didn't have any shots on net, had a minus five for five-on-five even strength Corsi's. It just didn't do anything. There was no splash. It's one of the true mysteries to me since the return of the Jets. He's got there so much apparent skill and dangle and all the rest of it. It seems to have this a natural gift, although it seems to have maybe weathered away a little bit over the last number of years. But just nothing really from him outside of a level of defensive prowess that is understood and held in decent regard, right? It still looks decent on the penalty kill, but just really nothing in the other direction.
No, and I just don't think it's going to be there for him. How is it going to all of a sudden see that
flick, right?
Right? Like, it's just you've waited, and you've given him enough chances, I believe, too, right? Like, we saw glimpses of it last year with the Dano kind of mixture there, and, you know, there was a little bit late in the season, but I mean, if you're judging him by his game on Saturday, it's not like he cemented himself in the lineup tonight.
I wonder how long, right, with the little injury here. Like,
and maybe Patan gets a shot. Like, you wonder how long it takes until one of the guys on the Moose, maybe, if you're looking for an offensive spark a little bit down the middle, you know, maybe you give Patan a shot there. Maybe you look at somebody else, because you're not, right now with Bermie and Lowry, you know, you might not be bad defensively, but you're not going to get a ton of offense from that bottom six.
Can you bring Patan in from a defensive standpoint on your second line?
You wonder.
Well, and you can also bring up Andrew Kopp, but I wouldn't on the second line. But maybe you do give him a shot.
Or you really cause great disruption to put Perreault to your second line and then just reconfigure a bunch of things. It's a conundrum. This little injury with Burmistrov's not really a second liner certainly either, right? So they got a big bowl of mess here to deal with until the return a little.
I was still a little bit surprised, and I know Paul Maurice will do this and shake up lines and look for different combinations, even when things are going well, and more so when they aren't. But I was still surprised that on Saturday they moved line A up with Scheifele and Wheeler and moved Ehlers down. I just thought that would be their mainstay line for a while and see how it all played out. And I know with maybe they felt Ehlers would play better with Burmistrov. They're more familiar with each other. But I'm not shocked or saying it's a crazy move. I was just surprised the second game in that already that Scheifele, Wheeler, Ehlers was broken up a bit.
I wasn't surprised. And I think it's probably never going to go back. I think it could stay like this for a long, long time. You have ultimately your best centerman. You have a potential superstar on the left wing, and along with Wheeler, and they had fantastic numbers from a Corsi perspective during the course of the game. Patrick Laine was right beside Wheeler. Both of those guys at 68% for 5-on-5 Corsi. No one was even close to what they were during the course of this game. I liked that line a lot.
That's a big line now. Like, those are some big boys up there, the three of them.
Mm-hmm. And just it's just going to be a matter of finding for Laine to get comfortable in the offensive zone and find that island, right, that he can create. And he, but, boy, his playmaking ability still. There's a number of passes cross-ice to Wheeler that he was feeding. I really liked what that line did. And I thought Ehlers really struggled with Scheifele. I know he had a great preseason with Scheifele and Wheeler, but I thought in that first exhibition game that he really struggled in that game specifically.
It is a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. The Boston Bruins are in town to take on the Winnipeg Jets. We'll discuss that much more, and of course the Boston Pizza fan line will be open at 9 o'clock. But the Bombers had another big win, this one in BC, 35-32. They're now in second place in the West. We'll talk with Milt Stegall next on The Big Show.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
iHeartRadio app is now available for preview. Download the app today and stream TSN 1290 and hundreds of other radio and digital stations for whatever mood or occasion. Your music, your station's always free. Download the iHeartRadio app today. A Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca as the Boston Bruins are in town to take on your Winnipeg Jets. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki walking you through this Monday morning here in Winnipeg. On a Jets game day, I do want to let everybody know that we will carry Game 4 of the American League Championship Series between Cleveland and the Toronto Blue Jays. It will begin at 3 o'clock tomorrow, so Husser and Lawless will be preempted, and first pitch will go at 3:08. So Game 4 of the ALCS between Cleveland and the Toronto Blue Jays will go tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock right here on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Another great game between the BC Lions and Winnipeg Blue Bombers on the weekend, and the Bombers sweep the home-and-home series. They take it 35-32 Friday night in BC, and to talk about that and the CFL in general, we welcome back into the show from the TSN CFL panel and, of course, a former Winnipeg Blue Bomber, great Mr. Milt Stegall. How are you on this Monday morning?
I'm doing great.
Have you calmed down from the excitement of another Lions-Bombers battle?
Man, it's been exciting. I tweeted out, I wish these guys could play again next weekend. I mean, it's a very entertaining game, of course. Being a Bomber fan, it's always great to see the Bombers come out on top. But just the excitement of the game, the anticipation, it was just a very entertaining game for everyone involved.
Milt, we've seen Wally Buono let guys go a little bit early before, and whether dollars were involved or whatever the bottom line reasons for it. We had Baron Simpson here, right, for a number of years, real productive guy after Wally let him go. Man, is watching Andrew Harris ever inspiring. The way he's one of those few backs that you're not hitting him, man. He's hitting you. He's just, boy, he had a wicked game.
And I would love to see if Andrew Harris played 18 games, you know, when in that offense, and see if he could be the first running back to get 1,000 rushing, 1,000 receiving. Because I always say he's the one running back who can do it. He's a special player. And you knew he was hyped up for that game playing against the team who basically said, we don't think you're worth what you want. And Winnipeg scooped him up, and it's been a great, great marriage for that team. He's a special player. He's tough mentally, physically. He can do so much for that team. Don't get me wrong, your quarterback, of course, is your most important position on the field. But Andrew Harris, when he's going, that offense is going, and it's evident every time he steps on the field, and he's so productive for that offense and for that team.
Andrew Harris had a big game going back to his old stomping grounds, and Bombers rookie safety Taylor Loeffler had an outstanding game. And, of course, he is from BC, and he played some college ball out there as well, Milt. I've been on his bandwagon ever since he came in for Macho Harris and basically took his job when Macho went down with injury. I'm wondering, in your time, have you ever seen a rookie have this much of an impact at that position?
Man, I have to think back, and it's been so long. You had to give me a second, but
yeah, go ahead.
I can't remember offhand. I don't know if Troy can, but I just can't remember offhand somebody stepping in and basically being the quarterback of the defense. And if not for an injury, we don't know if he would have got that opportunity this year. And I think he was a fourth, fifth round draft pick. I just let you know. So what if you're not an early round draft pick? If you get your opportunity, if you're prepared, if you're ready to play, you can have success, and that's exactly what he's doing. He's a physical presence back there. And I mean, you want your safety to have range and to be able to go up and make some plays, but you want a physical presence back there. You want the opposing team receivers to start thinking about, okay, when I go across the middle, is this guy going to be there waiting to hit me, this 6'3", 6'4", safety who's very physical? And that makes a difference. That makes a difference in everyone's game planning. So it's nice to see him have this success. Like I said, no one thought he would do this, being a fourth, fifth-round draft pick, but he stepped right in, and it helps that he's Canadian. So that allows you to change some other things with your ratio. So that's a big plus for these Blue Bombers, not for just this year, but maybe the next decade.
Milt, I'm not sure if it's scheme-related or if it's personnel-related, but the Bombers do give up a remarkable number of yards, the most in the league, and it was a bit of a defensive battle early in the early stages of this game against BC, but you sure get the understanding going forward here, whether it's the end of the regular season or into the playoffs, the Bombers, what's going to fuel them is, can they continue to create the takeaways at some rate close to what they're doing?
Well, and that's been the question we've been asking. Can they continue to do it? And they have been able to continue to do it. And I know it's somewhat of a concern that they continue giving up those yards, but the bottom line is they're finding ways to win. And in years past, they were finding ways to lose, but they're finding ways to win. Of course, you would like to be able to go out there and not have to create all those turnovers to win games, but if that's your formula for success, if it's been working for you, hey, if it's not broke, don't fix it. And that's been the case for them. I'm for sure there's going to be a couple of games. I mean, they only have two left, and maybe something in the playoffs where they're going to need Matt Nichols to go out there and throw for a bunch of yards. And I think he showed us enough where if he has to do that, I think he can do that. But right now they're relying on their defense and special teams to create turnovers, put that offense in good field position, and go out there and score some points. So, like I said, if it's not broke, don't fix it.
I'm talking with CFL on TSN analyst and former Blue Bomber great Mr. Milt Stegall on The Big Show, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. And Milt, I'm looking at the standings here, and I see Ottawa's clinched a playoff spot. Henry Burris got the start again. Was a little vocal, but not as vocal as he has been after the game in his belief in himself. What are your thoughts on the Red Blacks going back to Henry Burris and the fact that they clinched a playoff spot with him in the lineup as a starter?
Well, that team is all about playing the hot quarterback. Everyone says, a lot of people are saying they need to worry about the future and allow Trevor Harris to go through his growing pains. But that team, they went to the Grey Cup last year. They're not trying to take any steps back. If Henry Burris is a hot quarterback, that's who we're going to go with. If Henry Burris struggles, Trevor Harris steps in, he's a hot quarterback, that's who we're going to go with. I mean, this is a 9-team league. You have to concern yourself with what's best for your team right now. Right now, at this very moment, Henry Burris is best for that team. You know, he stepped in the game before last against Saskatchewan in that one quarter and basically brought him back. If not for that missed field goal, they have opportunity to win the game. And you see what he did this last game. So right now, they're going to ride out Henry Burris. What's to say if he's going to continue playing like that? We'll see. But right now, Henry Burris is that hot quarterback, and that's who they're going to go with.
Milt, if you're sitting in management seat in Saskatchewan, how aggressively are you going to be in re-signing Darian Durant?
I'm going to be aggressive. I'm also going to look for a good backup for Darian Durant based on his future, his past, his injuries, because this team is going in the right direction, and I know they'll try to ride this horse into next season. You know, I think they're on, three-four-game winning streak, so that's always good. But that means nothing when you step into next year's training camp. So this team, they need to add a couple more pieces. Of course you want to sign Darian Durant back. You want to give him some good money. But you also want to get a reliable backup. I don't know who that is, but you want to get a reliable backup just in case Darian Durant gets hurt.
They can't do anything about it because it is the bye week and it's what the schedule dictates. But is it a good or bad thing for the Bombers and the way they've been playing to get that bye right now?
You know what? I think it's a good thing. I think it's a good thing. I know they have some guys who – we need to get healed up. It allows them to game plan for these last two games, which they are playing the same team back-to-back, Ottawa back-to-back. So I think that's a plus for them. It allows them to put a couple of wrinkles in them. They've been trick plays the last couple of games, so it allows them to call our police to get back in the lab, do a couple of more things. So I think it's a good thing. It's going to also allow them to watch Ottawa and analyze them and really break them down. Ottawa has to play a game and then come back and play Winnipeg. So Winnipeg really gets to do a lot of film study I think that'll go a long way and possibly them finishing up this season on a two-game winning streak.
You follow him on Twitter, at Milt Stegall, at TSN, and he is the TSN CFL analyst and, of course, a former Winnipeg Blue Bomber great, and he is cute in the face, thin in the waist. Milt, thanks for this, as always.
All right, thanks for having me anytime.
Thanks so much, Turtle Man. Take care, bro.
Okay, take care. Mm-hmm.
You think it's a good time for the Bombers to get a bye?
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad time. Certainly, I'd rather have the one like here than the way it's set up for Calgary to have the bye, and then they're going to capture top spot. That's a long way. I think this is a good spot here for the Bombers to sort of get everything gathered a couple more weeks before the playoffs. I think it sets up well.
I like it right there. I think you get two more quick games in, but you're not laid off before the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So you're, it's not like you have one game and then the playoffs. I like it. It seems to work out this year perfectly for them.
Yeah, and they're not going to have to worry about having a bye going into the playoffs. So this is the dream one, right, where anyone that's banged up and questionable, I mean, a week off here is that's almost like another W at this point. And then you get a chance to kind of let the other teams beat each other up. And then, you know, maybe the Bombers can clinch that home playoff date in that first game against Ottawa. And then you get a bit of a mini bye in that final game.
I'm taking the bye again this week as well for the Bombers.
What a run over their last 11 games to be 9-2 after that 1-4 start. Truly remarkable.
It's a great season, by the way. Jacksonville pulled one out for me, by the way, too, gentlemen. And so that's two in a row for me. I took the bye against Jacksonville, the bye one.
You're sticking with Jack coming up this week, too?
Yeah. I got issues with how hot Matty Ice is, though. But we'll talk about the NFL six-pack later on this week. It is a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. We'll talk about the Jets and the Bruins next on The Big Show, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
I put my pants on one leg at a time. It's just when I do, I help make the Big Show. You got some more cowbell? Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruicki on the Big Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca, Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. And it is, once again, your chance to qualify for the Ultimate Jets game day experience. 780-1290. TSN 1290 giving you a chance to witness a Winnipeg Jets game like never before. Your chances to qualify Monday through Friday, 7:15, 8:15, 12:15, and 5:15. Enter online at tsn1290.ca for your chance to win bonus entry. We're dialing it up now. Everyone who qualifies will get a Jets gear gift card. Our grand prize winner at the end will receive a whole bunch of stuff during the day, and you'll get VIP treatment and really get a behind-the-scenes look at how the TSN 1290 broadcast team goes throughout game day preparations. You also win a ton of prizes, including a suite and tickets to the game, and of course an appearance right here on the Big Show and the Jets pregame show. Full contest details online now at tsn1290.ca. Grand prize winner will be announced on Monday, November 7th on the Big Show, 780-1290. Your chance to qualify.
I'm not sure which year it happens, JT, but can you smell
what the Rock is cooking?
Can you smell a Winnipeg Jets Toronto Maple Leafs Stanley Cup coming up?
Oh my gosh.
Holy cow. Will I still be alive?
I can smell it, man.
I smell something. It's not cooking either.
It's coming, baby.
A Leafs Jets Stanley Cup final.
Yeah.
It's that would be fun.
It's
ridiculous as that.
It's brewing, baby.
And impossible.
I wonder what that would be like coverage wise.
Well, north of the 49th, it'd be awesome.
Oh, yeah. It'd make the Westerners sick to their stomach. It'd be awesome. Amazing.
I'm getting a migraine. Just stop.
It is a game day here.
Might happen.
a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. It's almost maybe if the Jays can pull this off against Cleveland and face the Cubs, that would be an epic World Series. Cubs-Jays.
That would be. Yeah, we talked about that. And you wonder if the Jays better win today if they're going to pull this off, baby.
Yeah, they have to. They have to win today. Marcus Stroman on the mound against Trevor Bauer. Let's talk about this for a quick minute. I know it's the Jets game day, but Trevor Bauer comes out yesterday. He was supposed to start game two for Cleveland. Can't do it. Injured his finger. Comes out yesterday at a press conference to not only say what happened. I'm a big geek. I love Star Wars, and I play with drones, and I was repairing a drone. He brings the drone with him, puts it on the table, says, basically, when I ignited the flux capacitor to make the dilithium crystals go, the three propellers that were supposed to fire didn't, and the one that did fire caught my little pinky finger, and I can't pitch in the American League Championship Series.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
There's no need for honesty there, right? Like, no need
And why
for honesty.
Bring the drone? Who in the Cleveland organization goes, bring the drone out and specifically show them exactly what happened to your hand?
Someone probably did say that to him.
That's like saying on my off day I went fishing, and while the boat motor was running, I decided to dive in the water and see what was wrong with it during a playoff run that I now cannot pitch. It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, I think there, organizationally, you do your best to tell some sort of a fib to get by the finger injury and yeah. just try and bury it.
The only way this could have been more Cleveland if it was Kluber, and Kluber cut his hand off and couldn't pitch. Like that's the only way this gets. That's kind of why I have a bit of faith left in the series here, because it sets up nicely where Cleveland, what could happen? We're from Cleveland. We're up 2-0 in a big series, and our guy just cut his hand off almost with a drone. Like, I kind of like that aspect of it.
Like,
Toronto.
We hear about these contracts where they say, hey, you can't ride dirt bikes while you're under contract to us. Or you can't do this, or Drew Bledsoe wasn't allowed to go skiing or something during.
Can't play with drones should be a part of that.
Like, at least during the playoffs,
don't play with drones during the playoffs.
Flux capacitor misfired while the dilithium crystals were going, and I can't pitch game two of the ALCS, but I'll go tonight anyway. I just thought that extremely honest and dumb. On Trevor Bauer's part. We will carry game four for you live tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock of the ALCS between the Jays and Cleveland right here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. First pitch will go at 3:08. Husser and Lawless will be preempted, but they will be listening to this game. I can guarantee you that. It is a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. Husser and Lawless will kick it off live today from Boston Pizza City Place at 3 o'clock. Manitoba Building Trades Winnipeg Jets pregame show, rather, with Rick Ralph goes at 6 o'clock. Puck drops with Mr. Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns between the Bruins and the Jets at 7, followed by the Huron Windows Winnipeg Jets post-game show immediately following, and the Boston Pizza fan line will be open as well on the post-game show. Gentlemen, Kyle Connor, I said during the preseason, I thought he should probably start with the Manitoba Moose. I compared him to Nick Petan getting the start with the Jets last year and then going down in his first 2 or 3 weeks with the American Hockey League, just the growth and the learning process I could literally see during practice. Connor was a little bit different to me because not the points-wise. Nick Petan lit it up in junior, too, but Nick Petan had a couple of years of junior hockey before he came in. Kyle Connor basically had 1 year of NCAA, and he's on the team. What are your impressions of him for the first two games?
Sitting squarely on the fence. Just, didn't have a good game as far as numbers go and the rest of it with Minnesota, but still... I'll wait before I state a strong opinion on what I think of him and what I think that he might accomplish here. I'll just sit squarely on the fence and let maybe 3-4 more games play out before I come to a conclusion.
And that's probably because he has not been very good to start the year. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like it is tough.
Exactly.
Two games in, right? Like yeah. you don't want to. The main thing is you don't want to jump in and say moose bound bust.
It's not like Bistroff, right, where we've had a body of work to lean on. There's nothing there, and you just kind of wonder if he can.
Like, you've seen a glimpse of the offense a little bit so far, and he made a nice play on Line A's first goal in the first game of the season on the power play. But it's been a bit of a struggle for him, I think. And you just kind of have to wait and see if he's able. It's tough for a lot of these guys to adapt to the speed change, and especially – playing junior is one thing, and especially in Nick Petan's case where he goes to the Mem Cup final for a few years and he's kind of the best in junior. I think it's a bit different, though, going from the NCAA with Kyle Connor's Michigan Wolverines all the way up to the NHL right away. So I just wonder if maybe after this, I don't know, 8-game mark, if maybe he kind of adapts to the speed a little bit and makes plays quicker, that he looks a bit stronger out there.
And especially with his age, right? Like jumping from the NCAA – if you've been like putting 3 years in or something like that,
yeah,
one
that's
thing,
my
but
point.
As a rookie, yeah.
Like it's 72 games in the Western Hockey League a year for Nick Batan, 3 or 4 seasons of that, going to the playoff deeps run. That's a lot of experience that maybe you could make the jump. We're talking about a kid that had 1 year of NCAA hockey, and I know he had 3 goals in the preseason. I know he looked really good, but the preseason and the regular season are 2 different things. And I'm with you, Troy. Like, I'm not saying he's got to go down now. I'll give him, you know, even 8 or 9 games.
Yeah.
But it's just such a big jump for a kid who basically, out of the USHL, has had 40 games at the NCAA level. And to go from that to the NHL is such a massive jump. That's why when camp started, I was floating the idea of I would think he's best suited to be down in the Manitoba Moose, learn that pro game, learn the travel schedule, get to used to just not playing on weekends. That whole, you know, so for the first 2 games, I don't think he's been horrific by any means, but he has looked lost on the ice position-wise. The hooking penalty on Eric Staal on Saturday, like, it wasn't much, and I could tell that he was like, that's hooking in this league? Like, he's just learning it as it goes, and I just think that, you know, I'll give it a couple more games too, but that's why I was floating the idea. I didn't have him making the team out of camp solely just to get your feet wet at the pro level.
But he is going to have a chance to get his feet wet here, and then that evaluation will happen. And the good thing this year is that if he's unable to, or if they don't feel like he's truly ready, you got other guys there that can come in and fill that gap.
15:37 of ice time Saturday for Kyle Connor, 1:50 on the power play. We'll take a break, and when we come back, Alex Pruitt joins the Big Show, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
This is the Big Show podcast on tsn1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca on this, a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day as the Boston Bruins are in town. And of course, the Winnipeg Jets are 1-1 after defeating Carolina Hurricanes 5-4 on Thursday's home opener in overtime, come from behind win. They were up 2-0 in Minnesota on Saturday night and lost 4-3, so they'll take their 1-1 record into a 3-game homestand, which starts this evening as the Boston Bruins are in town. You can hear it live right here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with the Big Show, and we welcome into the program from a staff writer from SI Now, Mr. Alex Pruitt. How are you, sir?
Like, I got to keep the energy up with that intro music.
Yeah, bring it, man. It's Monday. What do you got?
Laziness.
I just yell when I need to bring the energy up. Doesn't go over well on the radio. I know you didn't write the story, but I was reading it. You tweeted it out from at @SI_NHL about the Toronto Maple Leafs, and we'll start there. They decided to break from tradition, retire 17 numbers to celebrate the 100th season. Obviously, we're honoring the numbers prior to that, but that's a lot of numbers out of circulation now for an NHL organization.
Yeah, I've kind of enjoyed the stories coming out about how all the guys who had their numbers retired, you know, how shocked they were when they heard the news. I mean, it's cool. It's a cool thing. It's a great time, obviously, with their centennial season to kind of honor history like that.
It's also cool seeing where the – and I'm just wondering – some people here just hate talking Leafs and don't like to say anything about them, but you have to absolutely take note of the entire process here since Babcock came on board and all the growing pains, everything else here. And for rookies on that team to score their first 6 goals where that hasn't been done in the expansion era, it's pretty interesting to wonder what might happen this season with Toronto.
They're going to be a real pain for teams, I think. Just purely by virtue of the young energy they have and the coach behind the bench. I'm going to kind of tease something out. I've been working on a story about Mike Babcock's one season he spent at the University of Lethbridge. It was way back when in the early 90s, and he takes this team that hadn't finished above 500 in its history before and wins a national championship with them. He has very clearly over time proven that he can get a lot out of people that people don't expect a lot out of. And I think, you know, a lot of people probably pick the Leafs to be at the bottom of the East, and it's still not unreasonable that they'll still finish near the bottom just because they are young and inexperienced. But, I mean, they got talent. They got the horses. They clearly have their franchise player in Austin Matthews, and I mean, Marner and Nylander have been pretty solid in these first couple games as well.
Alex, this is going to be eerie, but I covered that season in Lethbridge. It was my last year of college. It was 93-94, and he literally, Mike Babcock, saved the program. They were going to cancel hockey, and I believe he left college hockey in Red Deer to come to Lethbridge on a lame duck season. And they, as you said, I don't even think they even made the playoffs prior to that. He won a national championship with that team, and the whole school actually couldn't cancel a program that just won a national championship. So volleyball got the axe at the university because of Mike Babcock. In a roundabout way.
That part's a bummer, but the story of the hockey team is straight out of a Disney movie.
Yeah.
Alex, we were talking before the draft, just the, you know, if you were sitting in Arizona in management, how, and especially, I guess, maybe more so ownership, what you would be willing to have done to have been able to have land Austin Matthews. And it's pretty neat seeing with NBCCN here where they're, you know, they're releasing games that they're going to televise because he's playing in them. Real interesting, the impact he could have had he have ended up somewhere in the States, huh?
Yeah, you mentioned the NBC. I spoke with their executive producer, Sam Flood, the other day, and he was pretty transparent in saying, this is entirely because of Austin Matthews. You know, this isn't because Toronto and Boston are playing and it's the Leafs home opener. No. It's Austin Matthews' home opener. And you saw that in the press release where the headline was, you know, NBC has then televised Austin Matthews' home opener debut. I mean, this kid's going to have draw, and the NHL would, I think, would be wise to milk him for all he's got.
The start to this, and we're talking with Alex Pierrot, a staff writer at SI Now. You can follow him on Twitter, @Alex_Pruitt. Alex, this start to the NHL season reminds me of the 80s, the way the scoring is up so much. Any thoughts on that and how this has kicked off for the 2016-17 regular season with just so much scoring and wide-open hockey?
I got to say, I was not alive in the 80s, so I can't speak firsthand to that. But
it was a great time, Alex, for us fossils.
It is kind of reminiscent in recent terms of what Team North America did at the World Cup. I mean, you have this up and down kind of fast-paced hockey, and clearly the league was trending in that direction beforehand, but I don't know if there was some inspiration there or what, but I mean, it's been exciting for fans. It's been exciting for me to watch. I mean, just Austin Matthews, even aside, you're seeing, you know, 6-4 games, 5-3 games. And I think it's been a pretty good appetizer for the season.
Any thoughts on the state of the organization for things in Buffalo right now?
What a bummer, just for the health reasons. I mean, that's kind of where you got to start, right? I know there was probably hope this year that they would challenge a little more than they had in the past. I mean, Oposo was a pretty shrewd signing, and I mean, Eichel's only going to get better, and then to see Eichel go down like that. But I mean, they'll regroup. They're still young. I assume when he comes back that they'll be able to find their group.
I know it's coming out on November 22nd, but what's the latest you're hearing on a possible name for the Las Vegas franchise?
You know, I'm scheduled to actually talk with Bill Foley, the owner, later today. So, unfortunately, if we had done this tomorrow morning, I might have more of an update. But, yeah, the last I heard from team officials there was that they keep pushing it back. I think I saw some report out there, and forgive me for not mentioning the outlet because I can't remember, but seemed to intimate that there was just some issue with Adidas that they're, you know, it's taking longer to finalize the logo than expected. The sense I've gotten from fans, though, is they're just like, okay, come on, like, let's get this over with. You know what it is. You know what the team name is. Either just tell us the team name or, you know, basically quit beating around the bush. I think there's a lot of kind of exasperation, at least in my Twitter timeline when I tweeted out that news that it had gotten pushed back.
What are your thoughts on the impact PK Subban's making in Nashville on the ice out of the gate and just in an overall general sense for the Preds?
Yeah, you know, I had a good chance to go down and spend time with PK. I think it was like his third day in town there in Nashville when he was living there full time in mid-September. And he was so jazzed about the opportunity he had. I mean, you know, I think he very clearly is a businessman. He's a hockey player first and a businessman as well. But he sees an opportunity not only just in a market that very much values showmanship and entertainment, but in the United States as well. Just like with Shea Weber, and, you know, the way he plays, you can't really separate PK's personality from his style on the ice. They kind of inform each other, in my opinion. And that's what he's going to bring to Nashville. He's going to bring the lasso and the bow and arrow celebrations right off of a booming one-timer for his first goal there. They sold out a preseason game for the first time in history. Last I checked, They had sold out 40 of 41 home games, and they've never sold out all 41 in history. It's very clear the impact that he's going to have there, both in the marketing department and on the ice.
And that's saying something, given what a fan favorite Shea Weber was.
Oh, for sure. I mean, when I visited there, there were still pictures of Shea all throughout the arena. There was one giant banner even of him on the side of the rink. It's clear that they just hadn't had time to take down yet because there were so many of them. It's clear that, you know, he's not going to be forgotten. I think one of the first things David Poile did after the trade was type up a nice long letter, a thank you letter to Shea, and mailed it to him, basically saying, you know, we appreciate everything that you did here. This franchise is not where it is without the presence of Shea Weber. That's clear. It was also clear that in the way the league is trending these days, that the opportunity to get a puck moving defenseman who can skate, who can make plays, who can retrieve pucks like Subban does, it fit in a lot better with the style that Peter Laviolette wants to play.
Get your time. Enjoy the rest of the season, and we'll talk to you as the NHL regular season rolls along. Thanks for doing this. You can follow him on Twitter at Alex_Pruitt. Thanks once again, Alex. Have a great week.
Hey, thank you, fellas. Take care.
Take care, man. Great stuff. All the best.
And we have some breaking news here on TSN 1290, just coming out of Montreal right now. A tweet from Daron Carter, the receiver in Montreal for the Alouettes, just put out, "Had fun, Montreal. Much love. Much will be said in the next few days. Sorry I can't help Montreal get back to the glory days." And Kenny Stafford also says, "Thank you to the city and fans of Montreal on Twitter. It was good while it lasted." It sounds like both Kenny Stafford and Daron Carter are out as Montreal Alouettes.
That is mind-blowing. I mean, one of them, maybe, like Daron Carter, you see that, and you're like, okay, they had enough and whatever. But this is one of those situations where there's struggle involved with Montreal. And I tell you what, man, from being in locker rooms and you get 50 guys, a bunch of people from different backgrounds and personalities and all the rest of it, it's real easy to be a tight-knit group and you're willing to absorb a lot more from, in an individualistic sense, from teammates when you're winning, right? And when you're at 500, that's you can still absorb. But when things are south and you're losing and there's some level of chaos in there, the losing compounds things in a huge way and really, I think, truly reveals what and who men and women are at the core. And so there's obvious chaos going on.
Is Scott Milanovich running the Montreal Alouettes now? Yeah. Once again, breaking news just off Twitter. Both Daron Carter and Kenny Stafford, receivers with the Montreal Alouettes, who'd gotten into it with Rakeem Cato, the quarterback, earlier this season. We covered that and the disruption that Cato felt from the two receivers. And, of course, Daron Carter has been under some heavy scrutiny for his actions throughout the season, have both tweeted that they are done in Montreal.
And if you guys saw the Rakeem Cato press conference after Montreal's loss, I mean, just wanted to give the guy a hug. But you basically say, like, what am I doing here? Why am I playing? This isn't even fun anymore. Like, It's kind of like you touched on there, where the environment gets so toxic when you lose week after week after week. And now it just kind of, my immediate thought there is, we saw the Bombers snap up Torrey Gurley. I mean,
it's 8:45.
Does any team take a chance?
They might both get signed before 9 o'clock. Like you talk about, they are too, this is amazing.
Daron Carter, when he's on, is the best receiver in the league.
Yeah, but just can you tolerate
but
the
he's
jerk
the biggest
store, right?
Head case.
Like, can you tolerate that?
Well, yeah. We dissected Torrey Gurley coming to Winnipeg and his off-field issues, but the talent, you know, was
it's
worth it.
It's always like that, right? It's always that balance.
This is another big receiver. Like, who goes after him? Would the Bombers have interest in either of these guys?
Someone's going to sign them both in a hurry. And especially, like, Daron Carter is going to get picked up. I would be shocked if it's later than today.
But this is a move, if they were cut, had to be done. Like, I was surprised these guys, I was saying it for weeks, how do you let Daron Carter
run
your show if you're Jim Pop from the organization top down? And then, of course, Champ Delaine taking over. So, anyways, once again, this just off of Twitter, that receivers for the Montreal Alouettes, both Kenny Stafford and Daron Carter, basically bidding Montreal adieu They are done as Alouette players. Interesting. We'll continue to follow this throughout the morning because, as Troy said, they both might have contracts by the time we hit the 9 o'clock hour somewhere else. We'll continue to set up tonight's game day as the Winnipeg Jets host the Boston Bruins on a Birch Ridge Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. And, of course, 9 o'clock, the Boston Pizza fan line open. We'll continue to follow this developing story, too, as both Daron Carter and Kenny Stafford tweeted they are done in Montreal as Alouettes. It's the Big Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
TSN 1290 is giving one winner the chance to dude up their dream dwelling in a major way with the Man Cave. We're not renovating your basement, we're menovating it with some glorious upgrades, which include a Jet foosball table from Avo Game Room, an Xbox One console and a copy of EA Sports, new NHL 17 from PMP Games, a Burton Ripcord snowboard with Burton Freestyle bindings from Alter Ego Sports, a Frigidaire mini beverage center from Stalwart Appliances, a pizza party for up to 20 people hosted and catered by Boston Pizza and various sports swag from Royal Sports, and a wealth of delicious sausage rings provided by Winkler Meats. You may need a bigger man cave. Visit TSN1290.ca and enter for your chance to win the whole shebang now until Thursday, November 3rd. The winner will be revealed Friday, November 4th with the Big Show. Once again, breaking news just as we went to break. Daron Carter of the Montreal Alouettes tweeting out, "Had fun, Montreal. Much love. Much will be said in the next few days. Sorry I can't help Montreal get back to the glory days." Probably referencing that he is done in Montreal as an Alouette. And Kenny Stafford, the other guy who was in on the Rakeem Cato problems earlier in the season when Cato left practice, got into a shoving match with both, and basically they were saying that both receivers didn't take him seriously and weren't part of helping the team go forward. Kenny Stafford also just tweeted out, "Thank you to the city and fans of Montreal. It was good while it lasted." So it sounds like both Carter and Stafford are out as Montreal Alouettes in the Canadian Football League. This is big news.
Oh, it's shocking. And maybe, like, it's just weird that there's nothing really outside of those retreats. No one's biting on it or adding anything to it and looking at Montreal's feed and all the rest of it. So we'll, you know, this will clear up a little bit, but arguably right there with the Darius Bowman and Daron Carter, you get the most talented receiver all of a sudden cut loose and available. So it's just truly amazing.
Would you sign him?
Yeah, you know, because of how little's left in the, I said this about Gurley coming in, right? It's kind of like being in a new relationship where you don't really get to know the person until some time passes and a level of comfort comes in. I would think Daron Carter arriving wherever he's going to go, whatever happens here with the CFL, he'll keep things in check. And then that'll be, if there's a problem to be had, it won't be until next year that comes into play, I think. So, heck yeah, if you don't sign him, your opponent is going to. So I think, like, I don't know who gets him, but my goodness, what teams would be willing, if he is truly available out there, what teams will be willing to dish out to acquire him, too, will be remarkable.
Yeah, first off, is there a player more tailor-made for Chris Jones than Daron Carter? Or you just get talent through the wazoo and then, you know, maybe a head case to kind of match what he brings out there on the field. So I wonder if that's maybe his destination in the next coming days here. But it also comes down to teams where you almost get a guy. You see this at the deadline too. You get a guy so another team can't get the guy. So like there's a bit of a chess match to be had there. So I wonder because Edmonton brought in one of the Argos receivers. You wonder if there's any more room in
Hazelton,
Winnipeg.
Yeah.
But Calgary hasn't made a move yet, and I wonder if, you know, at basically 15-0, if maybe they just kind of go for the kill here and get.
If
the
you're
big
Daron
guy.
Carter, wouldn't you want to go get a ring and a trophy?
I'll be a church boy,
right?
Gary Lawless just tweeting out about 44 seconds ago, just spoke to Daron Carter, and he says he and veteran receiver Kenny Stafford have been released by the Montreal Alouettes, so they have been let go by the Montreal Alouettes, according to Gary Lawless, senior correspondent, of course, co-host of Husser and Lawless right here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca, senior correspondent for TSN. So both Daron Carter and Kenny Stafford are free agents after the Montreal Alouettes have cut bait with them. And I'm shocked it took this long. I have rarely seen, and I know he's a star player, and I know arguably probably the best receiver talent-wise in the CFL, but I have rarely seen an athlete run the show for a team like he was doing this year in Montreal.
I thought you were going to use another word that started with A instead of athlete, but well, glad I just, that you kept like, it there. Hey, I've said this before, and I've been through the 18 years in the Bomber locker room where there's been the odd bird that's walked in there that right away that you just knew was going to be trouble. I would rather go and in the foxhole to try and win games with brothers in arms instead of dealing with complete idiots like this. Like, I'd rather lose fighting with good, solid team guys than go win in a situation where you're like this and you have to absorb and endure a guy who's devouring the team around you, and I don't think it happens very often. I don't think very often teams go on to win when you have certain personalities that continually put themselves out in front of the team.
He and Stafford basically bullying the quarterback in pro sports.
What's weird to me about that is this isn't a politically correct thing to say, and I understand in today's, it's not something outside of the football world that would be acceptable, but I would really, to me, I'd act on that in a second, if something's going on strange like that, even just as a dumb little kicker, I'm going to get mouthy in the locker room about dealing with a couple guys like that. And why old lineman, for instance, didn't I don't know Cato, I don't know what kind of guy he is, but really strange that this whatever situation that existed there was able to sort of blossom and grow to the degree that it did.
You should nip that in the butt on a junior high football team, let alone at the pros at this level. Mm-hmm. But anyways, Daron Carter, Kenny Stafford, wide receivers with the Montreal Alouettes, no more. They've been cut by the team. We'll continue to follow this as we go forward. It is a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets host the Boston Bruins. Lineup changes. We're going to open the Boston Pizza fan line and get your thoughts on who you'd like to see in the lineup tonight against the Bruins. But lineup changes in Minnesota. Gentlemen, Ben Chiarot, Joel Armia out of the lineup. Chris Thorburn, Mark Stewart were put into the lineup. Who do you want to see on the ice tonight?
I will be shocked. I wish. Well, hey, who wasn't as a Jets fan? Who wasn't shocked that Armia wasn't a part of that? He had such a fantastic game. I didn't understand the move at all, especially against a division rival, a team that you're going to have to be past after 82 games to get a playoff spot. So the level of game of what he brought to the table, I was absolutely shocked that the switch was made specifically for Thorburn over Armia, and will be shocked again if he's not reinserted.
Who do you play in the Jets lineup? Who do you want to see in net? Is it Hutchinson or Hellebuck as the Jets host the Boston Bruins? Also, the Bombers had a massive win and big news. Would you sign either Stafford or Daron Carter, who have both been released by the Montreal Alouettes? The Boston Pizza fan line is wide open on a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day, 780-1290. Your call is next on The Big Show, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca, and a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruicki with you, and our game day coverage kicks off at 3 o'clock with Husser and Lawless live from Boston Pizza City Place. 6 o'clock is a Manitoba Building Trades Winnipeg Jets pregame show with Rick Ralph, followed at 7 by Puck Drop between the Bruins and the Jets with Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns, and then the Huron Windows Winnipeg Jets post-game show. The Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290, will be open on the post-game show, and it's open right now on The Big Show. Tim, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Yeah, regarding addressing Thorburn against Minnesota, I understand that you might want a guy like Thorburn in your lineup if you're expecting some extracurricular activity. But if you're just going to play him 6 minutes and then have him go out and challenge the other team's tough guy, I mean, to play that role, you may as well use Peluso. At least he'd win the fight.
I agree.
But what I would have done
totally.
With Thorburn was I would have just thrown him out, whatever line, after Coyle elbowed Shifley in the head and punched Morrissey in the face. I would have had him out against Coyle for the next couple of shifts to tell him, don't take a stupid penalty, but, you know, just whatever you have to do, talk to him, run him into the boards a few times, wash his face or whatever, you know, challenge his courage or whatever, try and get him off his game. But to throw Thorburn out like that, that was just a waste.
I agree with you. I thought I said this to the group I was, my uncles, when I was watching this game, where, you know, you're talking about how minimally he's being used and the way, like, he's not going to win a bunch of those fights. So if for all those the old school folks, sort of thinkers out there that think winning a fight does something to inject enthusiasm and maybe momentum into your team, Chris Thorburn's not going to win a lot of those fights. If you're going to have a guy out there for a guy like Stewart, or, and I was projecting like Ryan Reeves, pick your other guys out there, the sort of the heavyweights that maybe you're going to have to go up against. I'd have Peluso in there too to make darn sure I won the fight.
Well, Peluso's not on the roster anymore. He's with the Moose. So
well,
if you're going to have somebody in that role, it's got to be Thorburn.
Yeah, and how I would go about it is I would put in the guy that can play hockey good. Let's play some hockey.
Yeah.
Are we here to win a fight or are we here to play hockey? Like, what are we trying to do here, honestly? Because if we're playing, if we're looking at talent and skill out there on the ice, Joel Armia has a clear advantage in every single category over Chris Thorburn. So I'm here to win a hockey game. That's what I want to do.
Well, it's again, the debate will rage, but whether you two agree with it or not, it's part of the game, and it's part of the game of the division rival that Paul Maurice believes in when you have a Chris Stewart in the lineup. And that's, I mean, Dennis Bayek talked about it. That's the philosophy. The philosophy is this is a tough division rival that we could see some of this action go on. And whether you agree with the action still part of the game or not, it's still part of the game.
Which is, but I make the point, if it's a part of the game, and you're playing a guy 5 or 6 minutes, then use Anthony Peluso, who's going to go and beat the hell out of some guy, instead
but
of Thorburn, who goes and loses
anymore.
The fight. But,
so
there's
to
a
go
mistake
with the
I'm
next...
saying.
So you would keep Peluso over Thorburn?
Yeah. For that role, are you kidding me? It's not even close.
I would doubt that Peluso would see more than 6 minutes of ice time than Thorburn.
Thorburn didn't? That's what Thorburn
saw.
Well,
no, but that's what I mean. If Thorburn saw six, Peluso's going to see half of that.
We win the fight. What, you want a guy to fight?
I see what you're saying, though, but
Thorburn's going to lose most of his fights. If for all the old, I don't care about this, but the old school guys out there and girls that think that, hey, we need a guy that's going to go win the fight to give us that shot in the arm in case we need it. Well, you got a guy down with the Moose that'll win. We haven't seen him lose a fight.
Okay, Boston Pizza Fan Line 780-1290 on the Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon with you. Rick, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Morning, boys.
Morning.
I want to talk about the Jets, but just one thing on Joey Bats. I think he made a mistake. I played a little bit of sports, but watched a lot, and I think nothing ever good comes out when you're calling an official or an umpire or a referee a dummy or a cheater. This isn't going to work in their favor. As non-biased as they have to be, but, I mean, people are people. I've never seen it go the right way, so...
Well, and to be honest with you, when the Jays don't get the calls, it's because of Jose Bautista.
Yeah.
It's because of Jose Bautista's years and years and years of thinking he's the only guy in the major leagues that gets bad strike calls.
Yeah, he's a bit of a crybaby sometimes. But let's talk about the Jets. I was thoroughly, thoroughly disgusted with the Jets play on was it Saturday night?
Saturday, yeah.
They horrible. They were absolutely horrible. How many times did you see, like, you finally get the puck out of your own end somehow, thank God, and you cross center ice, and then you give possession away. Boom, you just dump it into the corner, and you don't even retrieve it. I was just disgusted. But I'll tell you what really kind of makes me kind of mad is that, like, the whole theme of the show this morning, I don't mind Chris Thorburn, but he's useless, right? And that's the whole thing, and he can't fight. And if he only played 6 minutes, it was the most useless use of a player, in my opinion, I've ever seen. To have a guy where you have a guy that was a young player that was maybe the player of the game, at least defensive player of the game in Armia, and you sit him out. Why, I don't know. So that in itself is maddening. And I've never been a big Burmistrov fan, although I'm coming around on like analytics and things a little bit more. So to me, he's like an analytic enigma. I mean, he might even look pretty good on Corsi, but nothing ever happens when he's on the ice. He holds on to the puck too long. It's the eye test is here going to win out. So what I think the Jets need to do is finally, for some reason, is put Dano and Kopp in the lineup, put Thorburn and Bermistroff in the minors. If someone picks them up, thank God you don't have to pay him anymore. I know it's kind of cold. But these, and I don't know why people say these decisions are hard to make. They're not. How are they hard to make? I mean, even a dummy like me in West Kildonan, and I'm watching TV, and I can see you're making the wrong choice. What's going on here?
The problem, Rick, don't do that. Don't beat yourself up like that, man. But the problem, seriously, with putting Thorburn and Bermistroff on waivers and losing them, I understand what you're saying there and getting rid of their salary, but as we've seen in Game 1, Brian Little's down. Like, these guys are depth that this organization needs, and although they have way more depth this season than they have in the previous five, in my mind, you still need these depth. I mean, we're in Game 2, and you lost your second-line center in Game 1. You need some of these guys around for when the bodies start falling, which inevitably they will.
It's an interest. I like what he's saying, though. Like, hey, take Bermie out, put Matthias in the middle, put Dano on the left side. Whatever you're going to do to massage and create this, it's going to be real interesting. We talked about this earlier this morning. How long of a look does Bermistroff get here during the lengthy time that Brian Little's going to be out? How long are they going to take a look at him? He did nothing special, nothing positive really in that game against Minnesota. Real bad turnover, no shots on net, over 14 minutes played, had bad Corsi numbers. There just wasn't anything there.
Back to the Boston Pizza phone line, 780-1290 on the Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Brent, you're on the program. Go ahead.
How's it going this morning, boys?
Good, thanks.
Good. Talk about the Jets team a little bit. I think we need a centerman who can win some faceoffs. I don't know. I wasn't listening to the show earlier on, so I don't know if it was talked about, but it was pretty sad watching every faceoff get lost, or it just seemed like everyone was being lost. For that, I mean, regardless of how Burmy plays, they need a centerman on there who can win the faceoff once in a while.
Well, and that was the thing about Andrew.
I'll let you go. I'll hang up and listen.
He was 27% for the night too.
That's one of the things about Andrew Kopp. When he was sent down, although he struggled in his last preseason game, he was pretty good in the faceoff circle in the 70s in the first two preseason games. The Jets overall on Saturday were 45%, the Wild 55%, and you said Bermistroff was 27% in the faceoff circle?
Correct, yep.
It's all about puck possession, and that's the thing that they were talking about, Maurice and Blake Wheeler after the game, and Sean Matthias was addressing it after yesterday's practice about they need to hold on to the puck more, and that's where it all starts, is in the faceoff circle. And that's why I say, like, say what you want about Brian Little, so underrated. I think he was second overall in the NHL before he got injured last year. Not on the team, but in the entire NHL in the faceoff dot, and people say to me it's not that big of a loss. Last season?
Faceoff's taken. Faceoff's taken.
Certainly not one. He's a guy that's always hovering a little bit under 50%. Like, that's not a strength of his, but compared to 27%, it certainly is.
But that's what I mean. When he goes down and he's second in the National Hockey League in faceoffs taken.
Taken, yeah, but not
like,
one.
Yeah, sorry, I should clarify that. But, I mean, he's so valuable to this team, and then without him in the lineup, you know, they were hurting at the dot again on Saturday.
And I agree with what you're saying. I know the analytics guys and gals would be going nuts. Say, you know, the faceoffs one has very little to do with analytics, but to me, when you're talking about taking a faceoff in your defensive zone, for instance, you think about the Dumba goal, right? You're on the penalty kill, lose the drop, bam, you're right away, you're in trouble. Every time you lose a faceoff in the defensive zone, it's trouble. The offensive and neutral zone is a little bit different type of a deal, but certainly you want a guy that you can go out there to be fairly dependable. And Lowry and Scheifele had decent numbers, both at 54% for the night, but Bermistroff really struggled.
Thanks for the call, Brent. Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290 on the Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Ron, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. First of all, on the Bombers, I'm just, like, super pumped about this team going forward. I liked, Taylor Loeffler. There was a guy on, I think that was one night, Friday night, who talked about how he's going out to get a number 16 jersey, Bomber jersey. I feel the same way. If I'm going to get a jersey, I'm going with number 16. That guy's phenomenal. And this guy only got in because of an injury, and look what he's done. So I'm looking forward to the Bombers for the rest of the season. A lot of people would say, well, I'd like to see them go through the East and get the easier road. You know what? This team has excelled, and they've shown that they can play with the best. Let's go in the West, and let's do it there and show them that, this team's for real. And I'm, got to sign Matt Nichols as soon as they got a chance. And I know he's not throwing up numbers like Jennings and whoever else is throwing for over 400 yards and all that, but he's perfect for the Bombers. And you could tell that he's taking a bit of a leadership role on that team. And you guys talked about the rest, and is this a good time? Well, we got a couple guys like Mo Leggett and Ian Wild that could use this week off too. This is a good time for this to happen. We're going to go into those two games in Ottawa. It'll be all cherries after this. I'm really happy with that. As for the Jets, and you're talking about the putting in Thorburn and Burmistrov, and you guys were talking about the faceoffs. If you're going to put a centerman in there, I'm sorry, I'd go with Kopp over Burmistrov. I'd like to see Burmistrov and gone. Thorburn, I think he still may have a role here, but, I'm not sure. I know we don't, it's either Peluso or Thorburn, and I think Thorburn offers a little bit more if you're going to do that. Anyways, that's all I got. Guys, take care.
Ron, thanks for the call. I'm all on the bandwagon of Taylor Loeffler. I think it's a great draft pick. I know he had knee injuries, mm-hmm. and that's why he went probably as late as he did, but a huge pickup and just a guy who's made the most of his opportunity given to him.
And I'm right there with you, Ron, with the importance. If the Bombers can secure a second spot in the West to get that home playoff game, a great benefit for the organization, and, of course, that much more of a chance to win and likely a heck of a dogfight developing with the Bombers, with BC and Edmonton, whoever it is that might be coming here. And then, of course, you roll all the dice, and you go into Calgary, who's going to be favorites no matter who they play, and you wonder that it sets up real interestingly with this almost this destiny of this team thing going on with that destiny and how much good fortune they're getting with real timely turnovers and takeaways and all the rest of it. You have a 1-4-quarter affair in Calgary, start rolling and getting some takeaways, and who knows what might happen in that final. But to secure that home playoff game would be huge.
BC has a game in hand, and it is the Bombers' bye week. So right now, the Bombers hold the tiebreaker with the Lions and, of course, sit in second place going into their bye week with BC playing this week. Thanks for the call, Ron. Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on The Big Show, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon, and Chris, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. So I literally turned on the radio just as you guys were talking about Jerron Carter and Kenny Stafford being released, so I don't have any of the background. But I've been thinking about those two with all their troubles with Montreal, whether they're going to have a spot with us in Winnipeg. And I don't know. I would probably take a straw poll among some of the players and say, like, given what these guys might have as reputations, given what we've seen them do, especially Jerron Carter, say on Twitter and all the rest, is he going to come in and produce and be, like a reform school kind of situation, or is he going to be a distraction? Is he going to, be his larger than life self in kind of a negative way? But the other thing I was thinking is I would hate to be in Kyle Walter's shoes because, you got these two guys who are proven producers. But there has to be a sense of loyalty to the guys that brung you. I mean, this is a group of receivers who stepped up in pretty adverse situations. And I'd hate to just kind of bench a guy like, say, Clarence Denmark, who's been nothing but a pro and been produced, 9 touchdowns in the last 8 games, just for a guy like Jerron Carter who, has the reputation he has, and I think he's earned it. So I don't know, maybe Troy, you can speak to that a little bit. What is it like in the locker room when that happens? Is it difficult to kind of welcome in a new guy who has a bad reputation when you've watched your brother get benched in his favor? Anyway, that's all I got, guys. Thanks.
Thanks for the call, Chris.
That's a good question, man. That's a great question. And I don't recall off the top of my head being a part of a situation like that, but I wonder what it is, a real delicate situation that you're dealing with there when the guys you got are being productive, but you can bring in more or less the impact of Durant Carter in a decent mindset. And I think that he would be with just – he's not going to have time to get comfortable in whichever organization ends up signing him here. And I'm seeing here that Blue Bomber Talk, who's John Hodge, who appears – he's a great follow on Twitter, at Blue Bomber Talk, and does work for Three Down Nation, is saying that the Owls right now, six receivers on their active roster, two have never caught a pass. So who cares and who knows what they're doing in Montreal?
Well, and that speaks to what you're bringing on board if you sign these guys. That's how bad they wanted to get rid of these guys. And the same with Torrey Gurley, who the Bombers brought in.
And if they've given up hope of or whatever they're doing there, right? But somebody's going to sign. And I said this, like, it's sometimes it's a defensive measure to sign a guy like Durant Carter because you don't want BC or Edmonton coming in that playoff game with Durant Carter in their lineup. Like, it's this, whatever happens here is going to be fascinating.
Preventive measures, that's a good point as well, especially with the playoffs looming. We'll take more of your calls on the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290, when we get back to the Big Show, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
This is the Big Show podcast on tsn1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki, weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca, and a Burchard Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day as the Boston Bruins are in town to take on the Winnipeg Jets. Jim Toth, Brandon Ruwicki, and Troy Westwood with you in the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Ralph, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Morning, Ralph.
How are you guys?
Well, thank you. You?
Good. I observed that game on Saturday against the Wild, and what's his name, Stewart? If anybody that ever played hockey and watched hockey, he's an intimidator. He doesn't go out there and take stupid penalties, but he can intimidate, and you need guys like him. But one of the things they're talking about this morning in the free press is Brian Little this and Brian Little that. Well, one of the things that they miss from Brian is he takes faceoffs, right?
Yes.
And if you don't have the puck, you can't score, right?
Ralph, anyone can take faceoffs. You need to win them, man.
Unless you're the Vancouver Canucks, Ralph.
Yeah, but here's what I'm getting at. Gretzky the other day made the comment that he doesn't agree with dumping the puck in, and I agree with Gretzky 100%. See, when you're in this situation that we're in, you got to carry the puck in because Bruce Boudreau could see if you dump it in, he's going to pick you apart. So, therefore, you got to change your tactics. And also, I would bring up cops so fast it wouldn't even be, no problem. A cop should be up.
Call the cops and get them up here.
Yeah, and also, I like Hutch in the clutch, too, as goalie.
Hutch in the clutch, cop on the beat. We appreciate the call, Ralph, on the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. More of your calls when we get back to the Big Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
This is the Big Show podcast on tsn1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki, weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the Big Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca, Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. The Boston Bruins are in town. Husser and Lawless kick it off live from Boston Pizza City Place at 3 o'clock, followed by the Manitoba Building Trades Winnipeg Jets pregame show with Rick Ralph at 6. Puck Drop with Brian Munns and Mr. Paul Edmonds, your voice of the Winnipeg Jets, at 7. And then the Huron Windows Winnipeg Jets postgame show. Following that, on the postgame show is the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. And we go back to it right now on the Big Show. Mark, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Morning, guys. Two things I've went on late, so I'm not sure if you covered any of these. But any chance that the Bombers are going to be going after Carter and Stafford? And Westerman, it sure is nice to have him on the team, but imagine if he was on another team, we'd probably be wanting to kill this guy, and you know, every quarterback would probably want him suspended. Just in that game alone, you see a couple of shots of how late he's coming in at guys. But again, he's one of those guys kind of like how Ken Lensman was. You love him on your team, but you would hate him if he was on another team.
It's interesting.
Yeah. Kickers, no, no disrespect to Troy, but I've never realized how valuable a kicker can really be until Medlock's on our team this year. You take him out of the roster this year, and you know what? We're nowhere near where we are. Like, it's amazing how a great kicker, what he can do for a team. Like, he's just, his punting isn't the best, but that field goal kicking and the cockiness that comes out of him, the confidence is amazing.
Yeah, he is truly amazing. I agree with you, man, for sure. It's just, it's so automatic. It's just beyond ridiculous, right? Is he just operating at a whole new level? And I really get a kick out of what you said about Westerman as well. Met him a few times. Super nice guy, but boy, does he's got this real sort of, to say Kenny Lensman, like what a beauty comparison that is. Because the late shots and the little bit of more oomph for the quarterback, it's amazing how many late hits on quarterbacks he gets. It's just not stopped.
Amazing is one word to use. I mean, there's a bunch of others. I mean, it's gotten to the point where you see a flag on the field when the Bombers are on defense, and I can flip the channel because I know 55 late hits, some sort of personal foul. Well, it costs us 15 yards again. Whatever, we'll get a pick six coming back the other way.
Right.
I don't need him to be on a different team to feel hatred at some point. I mean, like, we kind of laugh at it now, but this is something that can very easily cost the Bombers come playoff time, because this isn't even a matter of, well, maybe you can dial him back. You're not dialing him back. He's going to continue to do this, and you just hope it doesn't come at the worst possible time.
He has that high energy, just like you said. You met him a couple times. I've met him a couple times too. He's just a high energy guy. He is. I don't know how he calms himself down to sleep, but the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290 on a Bertrand Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day on the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki. Who's next?
Let's go to Chip.
Chip, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead, my man.
Hey, good morning, guys. I think the Jets going forward are going to have a lot of depth in this organization. However, I feel that this Brian Little injury kind of highlights how little depth we have right now. If Bermeshoff was going to be an answer or an everyday player, he's had plenty of opportunity to show that by now. Like, he's not even, like, we talked about a skill set there, but he can't even use that skill set in the shootout. So what I'm curious is, perhaps with the Trouba holdout, this makes Chevy possibly think of, instead of a left-handed shooting defensive, probably looking for a center maybe. Does that change the Trouba situation at all as far as trade-wise?
I don't believe it changes the Trouba situation for Kevin Cheveldayoff one bit. I think Kevin Cheveldayoff is sitting there and is just waiting and is more than willing to wait the entire year. I think it's a matter of whether Jacob Trouba wants to wait an entire year.
I agree with you that I don't think there'll be an influence in the decision because of the injury to Little, and a fantastic way to put it, that I'm right there with you. The big question is Trouba and Overhart, are they willing to wait?
And that's an ongoing thing as this, we go forward into this season. And I understand with Bermeistroff, and it's been one game this season. I mean, we have a body of work here, and we know what we're looking at. But it's one game. This is going to be an interesting week because there's three home games. The Bruins tonight, the Leafs, and then, of course, the outdoor game.
Do you give him four or five
Edmonton.
Games?
Oh, well, you have to with Little out. But I give him four or five games, and then I say, okay, if it's not good, then I look at an Andrew Kopp. Then I look at calling somebody up. Barry Saunders tweets at me at Jim Toll Sports. You can tweet at Troy Westwood, @Brandon_Rewicki. But Barry Saunders tweets at me, let's have a look at Rossovic as the third center. I think that that's what's going to happen. It's going to be four or five games of this lineup, and then you might see some call-ups, barring any more injuries. But I think they're going to give the guys they have on this roster a chance to play. And then after, you know, a week or two, then they might look at calling somebody up and also want to get people comfortable with the Manitoba Moose as well.
Yeah, and I think Roslovic's going to be far down on that list. You're thinking like Kopp, Think DeLeo.
Yeah.
Think maybe Patan. Like, it's probably about that order. And not in the – you wonder in the second line, like, does it get to a point where you just push Perreault up to the second line and then to sort of reshift things in the third and fourth lines for who's going to be center? And you also have Matthijs as well, who can slip over to center, right? So it'll be interesting. There's options.
Not ideal options, but I guess there's something you could do still. The Trouba comment was kind of interesting, I thought. But having said that, you know, the center position has been very good, but have we seen what's happened to the back end this year? Like, outside of Byfuglien and Morrissey, and Enstrom's been all right, but, I mean, we talk about Mark Stewart and Ben Sherrod and who should be in, who should be out, but Tyler Myers plays a lot more minutes than either of those two guys, and he's just been awful. Like, it's tough to watch sometimes, and he has to be a lot better if this team is going to be successful, not only at keeping the puck out of their own net, but at moving the puck forward and getting something going offensively here. Because, and Paul Maurice kind of touched on this after the game in Minnesota, where, you know, people want more shots, but if we're in our end for 30 seconds, what happens? You get the puck out, and you got to dump it in, get a change, and you do that, you flip position right back the other way, and you kind of end up in this endless cycle of getting stuck inside your own zone. So, you know, you might want to get a centerman, true, but, you know, if you could grab some sort of defenseman for Trouba or whenever he signs, whatever, I think that still might be the more pressing need right now.
Oh, for sure. And I think that, you know, injuries are going to happen, but you can't build a roster based solely on when injuries. Like, to go after centers right now, I think, is a little premature. I think they need to fix the back end and continue to look at that, and will continue to. But I don't think Jacob Trouba is going anywhere. I think Kevin Cheveldayoff has shopped him since the summer and is not getting what he wants. And I don't think it's more so of what happens to the Jets roster injury-wise. It's what happens around the league injury-wise. And if other teams get decimated on their back end, do they up the offer for Jacob Trouba? That's the only way I see him moving on. And I'm very interested to see if he's more than willing to sit out the year, because I think that's the only thing that's going to change this.
I'm really – the one thing that I am interested in related to the back end, guys, that – Josh Morrissey might be solid enough, consistent enough to be that complement to Buff on the left side. Like we won't know that for another maybe 40 games, maybe not till the end of the season, but it may well be at some point in time people look at the situation and this jump that Morrissey's taken and go, you know what, he belongs there. So that if that's the case, that changes everything with Trouba.
Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. If you want to join the conversation on the Big Show, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westford, Brendan Rewicki. And I agree with you, but I think the ultimate package is that Morrissey pays off and is ready, and you get Trouba in the lineup. Like, that's what they're fighting to do, is to get that depth. Like, the ideal situation is Morrissey is ready, has a great rookie season, and you have Trouba in the fold.
Yes, and I understand that. But I'm just wondering, from a trade perspective, you know, it'd be great if Trouba was back and playing on the left side, and then Morrissey jumps down to that 5-6 pair, and boy, that makes things a lot stronger all the way through from a depth perspective. But if you're talking about shopping Trouba, and at some point in time in the future you get to a place where you're comfortable with what Morrissey's doing, and you feel that it's not a mirage or it's not something that's going to be short-lived, but he's going to settle in and become your left side complement to Dustin Byfuglien, at that point in time, I think it changes what you might want coming back.
So do you, as this go forward, maybe not take a top two defenseman, but take a top four and maybe a third line center
in
return?
Yes, something along those lines. That gets really interesting.
Yeah, I still don't think he does that. I think this is what we believe Trouba is. This is what we want in return, and I'm not bending.
If Trouba hangs out for the year, though,
yeah, I think I think he still goes into the summer and says, I still think that as much as you need Jacob Trouba in your lineup, I still think that he's the one that needs to be playing hockey more. He's 4 years away from making this move that he wants to make.
I'm just saying that if it ends up being the entire season Trouba sits out, and if Morrissey plays the entire season by Buff, you'll have a real good understanding at that point in time if he's just how settled and comfortable you are with him on the left side of Byfuglien.
Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on the Big Show, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Steve, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Do you guys know if Tuukka Rask is starting tonight? Or I guess you'd have no idea yet. Huh?
We won't know until the pregame skate for the Bruins at about 11:15, 11:30 today. But they feel that he will be because he didn't play Saturday.
So you know what I want Blake Wheeler to do? I want him to go beside Tuukka Rask, bend down like he's taking a faceoff, and say, Hanrahan! And I forget all the rest.
Easy. Everybody knows.
I'm going to slowly pot Steven down there.
That's only going to work if it's true. And I don't know Tuukka Rask's personal life, so we'll move on. But, hey, Steve, I like your way of getting an edge to move forward. Boston Pizza fan line 780-1290 on the Big Show, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Steven, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Two quick points. First, with this coaches challenge in the NHL, they've got to, I think, take a page out of the CFL book and change the kind of sanctions. It's a little ridiculous to see coaches on late tying goals call essentially a 5-minute timeout when there's clearly nothing wrong with the play and they're getting a second timeout out of the deal. So I really think they should start considering a delay of game penalty when they call these reviews and they don't pan out. I think that would temper the coaches and they'd only really go after what they feel they need to go after in these cases.
Good call, man.
It's interesting, right before you get to your next point, Steven, watching that Seahawks-Falcons game yesterday, and we debate how much we detest, and Brandon, you brought this up when we got in this morning, how much we detest this pass interference rule and how long it takes in a game, but how much would they have loved that to be able to review that pass interference at the end of the game on Julio Jones?
Oh, absolutely. And that's the thing. I mean, I think there's got to be a limit to how many times you can do it, especially if you've failed before. But rather than sort of taking away timeouts in football or in hockey with the coaches, start penalizing them. It is a delay of game. It's an unnecessary delay caused by something from the bench, and it just make it a bench penalty.
I tell you what, I can't stand that coaches can challenge goals. I think every goal should be reviewed quickly by the league, and 95-98% of the time there's not going to be any delay. Take it out of the coach's hands, put it in the league's hands, the same way the NFL reviews all touchdowns.
Yeah, well, and hey, the CFL this year took on the challenge of doing a quick instant review on a few plays, and I can think of a couple of times where they've sort of held up the play to look at it, but it's not taken anywhere near as long as it takes to walk over to the coach, get the explanation of what you're checking, then review 85 different components of the play, especially when you're talking about a play that's on the other side of the field that has nothing to do with the play at hand.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah. Real quick, Hutchinson and Hellebuck, why do I get the feeling that if Andre Pavlik had been in net and let in those two goals that Hellebuck let in against Carolina, or that fourth goal that Hellebuck went in, there'd be pitchforks about how he lets in the soft goal at the wrong time. We're not seeing any better goaltending as of yet, and we're not seeing that big key save from these guys when we need it as of yet. And I've always been a bit of a Pavlik apologist. I think he got a raw deal given the defense that was playing in front of him. I know one of you guys, I think Jim, you'd asked, would he be a 920 goalie, save percentage goalie on a better team? Well, he was the year the Jets committed to defense. So I wouldn't be looking to move him to L.A. just yet because I don't think we've got anywhere near the resolution in our goaltending.
Well, and it's only been two games and one game each, so I'm going to wait for a bigger sample size this season to start banging that drum. And it's not a Pavlik apologist drum. It's this team needs better goaltending, and people keep screaming for a better goalie, better goalie, better goalie. And I will hearken back to they need better team play as well as better goaltending. That doesn't mean they don't need better goaltending. They do. And Pavlik needed to be better as well, but this team needs to play better in front of their goalies as well. I think it's part and parcel, and I thought we saw that through the first two games.
And to me, you're talking about, with Connor Hellebuck, for instance, you're talking about, hey, we pointed out that there are two weak goals on him, no question about it, but most people in evaluating that, they're a little bit more understanding, resilient of it, because you go from, yeah, he let two bad goals in. You remember his level of success from a 26-game perspective last year, and you move forward hoping that he straightens that out. Hutch, the one soft goal that he had, I think, in this most recent game as well, same, which I thought was the Dumba shot, where you go back and you know, 3 years in, this being his fourth year, I think, right, with the Jets, and some questions there. But when you got Pavlik in the body of work, a bunch of it has to do with the body of work previous to that that's going to add or lessen the amount of criticism by fans. So it's not, to me, that's why a guy like Connor Hellebuck, two soft goals, yeah, that's a little concerning for sure, no question about it. But what we've seen before this, they're still – that's true with any new player in any new sport, right? A young player, you're going to be a little bit more tolerant of mistakes.
But I'm not with you on the fourth goal from Jonas Brodin either. I know he was screened.
He was totally screened by
Myers. If you're
playing
the post well from where the puck is, that doesn't go in whether you see the shot or not.
Oh, sure it does. And that's over the shoulder, short side. Used to be a sin in goaltending. Now with butterfly style, it's not. That's where you get beat. Up high, buzz the tower, over the shoulder. It's there for with all goalies.
But we'll continue to cover it as well. As I said, I think, yeah, it's only two games in. I'm not going to harp on either goalie yet. But we will, as Troy said, point out that they both let in some soft goals that they should have had in each game. We'll see what this week brings. We'll get to more of your calls on the Boston Pizza fan line. 780-1290 on our Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The Children's Hospital Foundation is dedicated to ensuring that every child treated at the Children's Hospital receives the best medical care possible, but they can't do it alone. Join TSN 1290 and Selkirk Chrysler Dodge Jeep in caring for kids. Text KIDS to 54321 and you'll be helping make a difference. Selkirk Chrysler Dodge Jeep will donate $1 to the Children's Hospital Foundation for every text message they get throughout the month. That money will go to the Children's Hospital Foundation to help improve the health of children everywhere. Caring for Kids is proudly supported by Selkirk Chrysler Dodge Jeep and TSN 1290. Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day on the Big Show. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruicki, and more of your calls on the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Right before we get to our next call, Kirk Penton following this, and of course our very own Gary Lawless, TSN senior correspondent and co-host of Husser and Lawless. The CFL and the CFL Players Association say that Kenny Stafford and Duron Carter, both released by the Montreal Alouettes, are free to sign with any team, but being that it's past the trade deadline in the CFL this year, they cannot play for the rest of this season. So Montreal trying to clear some salary cap and obviously get rid of some problems. I'm not sure that's the best way to do it. But both Duron Carter and Kenny Stafford can sign with a team in the CFL this year, but they cannot play for the rest of this season. So that's an interesting development with this story as well, just released by Montreal this morning. Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. John, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Just want to know two things. Does it make it easier for Trouba to sit out a year, as they'll either have to protect him or trade him? And then number two, do we have to use a spot to save Morrissey on that expansion draft, or is he automatically protected? Thanks. Bye.
They do have to protect Jacob Trouba, whether he's signed or not. I don't think it makes him harder to do that. I think they look at it just because he's not active. He's still an entity to the team and would go about protecting him. Josh Morrissey, if he plays the year and qualifies as his full rookie season, will need to be protected, as far as I know.
This is his second year, isn't it? Morrissey's a playing pro?
Yes.
So aren't you, if you've had...
Yeah, Morrissey's okay. Morrissey kind of falls under the Ehlers
as long as you
umbrella.
Have 2 years or less of pro.
Oh, yeah, from when they were... Yeah, you're right, you're right. So Morrissey does not have to be protected. He will remain with the Winnipeg Jets. Trouba will have to be, whether he has a contract or not, or else Vegas can pick him up in that. Thanks for the call, John. 780-1290 in the Boston Pizza fan line, if you care to weigh in. The Winnipeg Jets host the Boston Bruins tonight. No word yet. The pregame skate will go at 10:30 at MTS Center on who will be in net and what the lineup might look like. Joel Armia, Ben Chiarot were not in the lineup. Of course, Brian Little injured week to week. So Chris Thorburn and Alex Burmistrov drew into the lineup, and Mark Stewart did on the blue line in Minnesota, a 4-3 loss. I should once again thank Fast Air and takeajaunt.ca, as on the weekend, our lucky winner of our Twin Cities Takeover contest, Daniel Siwak and his wife joined us on a great trip. And this was a private jet that flew into Mini St. Paul Airport. It's a 10-minute drive from the arena. We watched the game, 10 minutes back to the airport, and we were back in the city within an hour and a half of arriving at the airport. They have extensive packages available to you if you want to get down and see some Minnesota Wild games, some Vikings games. They're also going to a Packers-Seahawks game in Green Bay and have a Masters trip planned for April of 2017. Takeajaunt.ca if you want to get in on this package. It's a great way to go see some games in a much faster, convenient way than potentially driving or flying commercial airlines. Had a great time. Daniel Sywek, our winner here at TSN 1290 and part of Fast Air's Twin City Takeover, and his wife and another couple from Vernon. We had a great time on the trip and was an excellent to get down there so fast and back to take in the game between the Minnesota Wild. Great atmosphere down there as well. Gentlemen, the Boston Bruins are in town. Now, what are you expecting tonight?
It's going to be very interesting to see what the Jets are able to accomplish tonight. Boston, a lot of people thinking somewhere below average, maybe, for the teams upcoming here. Will the speed, let's watch Chara with all the speed of the Jets. That should be interesting. We saw Mitch Marner take advantage of that a little bit, and this ultimately is a game that the Jets should be able to go out and win.
Yeah, Winnipeg's been hovered around 40% puck possession so far this season, which for sure is the bottom three in the entire NHL, maybe worse depending on some sites. Mm-hmm. So for me, if they can't take advantage of a Bruins defense that really you should be able to handle a little bit here, there's going to be a bit of alarm bell starting to sound off here. But it'll be, I mean, whenever the Bruins come to town, it's always a good game. It's always like, I don't know, there's just some sort of atmosphere, and the two teams kind of match up very interestingly. So, you know, you wonder if Brad Marchand maybe stirs the pot a little bit and goes after Big Buff, get some fireworks going.
Bertrand Chevrolet, Buick, GMC, Winnipeg Jets game day. Bruins are in town. Husser and Lawless kick off our live coverage at 3 o'clock from Boston Pizza City Place. Rick Ralph has the Manitoba Building Trades Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 6. Winnipeg Jets game puck drops at 7 with Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns, and then the Huron Windows Winnipeg Jets postgame show. Also want to remind everybody that we will carry live Game 4 of the American League Championship Series between the Toronto Blue Jays and Cleveland tomorrow at 3 o'clock. It'll be live right here on TSN 1290. Husser and Lawless get a break, and first pitch will be at 3:08. Also want to remind everybody, along with tonight's live game between the Jets and the Bruins and Wednesdays with the Maple Leafs, TSN 1290 live coverage of the Jets-Oilers alumni game at IGF begins at noon Saturday. Puck drops at 3 on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. And our live coverage of the Jets-Oilers IGF outdoor game begins at 11 on Sunday. Hey, we got something to give away too. The MTS Heritage Classic Prize Package. TSN 1290 and MTS want to help you celebrate the classic in Winnipeg. Listen all week long for your cue to call and qualify to win an exclusive Heritage Classic prize package, two awesome Heritage Classic hoodies, two awesome Heritage tees, color mini sticks and patches, and a couple of retro toques and scarves. TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca has all your details. Give us a call right now, 780-1290, if you want to win that package. Enjoy the game tonight. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Jim Toth, and Brandon Rewicki, we're back at it tomorrow at 6 a.m. on The Big Show, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekday 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.